for his lack of support over Iran with an impersonation during a White House lunch. Is it time that the Prime Minister reacted? Later in the hour, we'll give you the full rundown on the bank holiday travel as 21 million Brits prepare for the Easter getaway. How much disruption are we expecting from Storm Dave? And you'll hear from Reform's Treasury spokesperson Robert Jenrick as the party throws its weight behind the triple lock. Something I think is probably a bit of a mistake, but you'll have your views on that, and you can express them for the next 3 hours here on LBC with me, Ian Dale.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, senior bosses at Marks and Spencer have called on the Home Secretary and London's Mayor to do more to tackle high street crime. The intervention comes after an M&S store was among shops targeted in Clapham in disorder earlier this week. Six arrests have been made following that disorder involving large groups of teenagers in southwest London. Former Detective Superintendent at the Met Police, Shabnam Chowdhury, has told LBC she thinks social media played a big role.
You get groups of people, a lot of these probably didn't even know each other. You get them to link up, they all arrange to congregate in a particular area. Really what the police will have been looking at is what the intelligence is within those link-up messages. So was it a call to violence? Was it a case of just congregating and causing antisocial behaviour? They'll be looking at that already.
The Home Office says it is giving police stronger powers. 100 experts in international law have warned of serious violations by the United States, Israel and Iran in the conflict in the Middle East. The open letter says the rhetoric and conduct of the US is concerning and could amount to war crimes in certain instances. The White House says the US campaign is making the region safer and acting in the interests of the American people. LBC has learned children as young as 12 are setting up businesses to make money from selling knives online. A new national centre has been set up in an attempt to bring down knife crime in the country. Commander Stephen Clayman is heading up the prevention programme and has spoken to LBC.
I think the problem is that some children don't see what they're doing is wrong, and they are, yes, effectively setting up a business, peer-to-peer, making some money, connecting other people, using their supply routes for others. And that's hugely concerning, because if we start seeing that develop even more and then they start using, you know, young people to deliver the knives, you're talking about similar exploitation that you'll get with drugs.
NASA's Artemis 2 missions left Earth's orbit on the first crewed mission to the moon for more than 50 years. Overnight, four astronauts on board the Orion spacecraft fired the engine to free the capsule from Earth's gravitational pull. And thousands of Easter rail journeys will be disrupted today by a partial closure at the West Coast Main Line. The six-day shutdown between London Euston and Milton Keynes is to allow for major upgrade works. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas through Good Friday. Some sunny spells and showers in the north and in the east, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see, where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Very good morning to you. It's 3 minutes past seven on LBC. Shall we all have a sweepstake and see how long it takes for me to say good evening over the next 3 hours? Because it will happen, I can assure you. Do you ever get any sleep, says Paul Neal. I got about 5 hours sleep last night, which is okay, I suppose. Could be better. But it's great to be here on this Good Friday morning. One of the things I want to do later in the programme is to ask what does Good Friday actually mean? Because I think unless you are a devout Christian, probably most of us don't really know what Good Friday is all about. So we will find out later. But in this hour, yes, we are going to talk about President Trump again, because yet again, he's been mocking our Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer. And it doesn't really matter what your politics are. And as you know, my politics are not Keir Starmer's. But I am absolutely incensed by the insults that President Trump is throwing in his direction. But if you were French, and if you were listening to what he said about President Macron at this lunch yesterday, you'd probably be even more furious than I am about what he said about Keir Starmer. Because he's been mocking our Prime Minister over what he sees as a lack of military commitment from the UK to the war in Iran, and also the French President, referencing a 2025 video that showed his wife, Brigitte, shoving her husband in the face. That's to put it politely. Trump was speaking at the White House Easter lunch gathering.
The king is coming over here in 2 weeks. He's a nice guy, King Charles, but should be our best, right, Brooke? But they weren't our best. I said, you have two old broken down aircraft carriers. You think you could send them over? Oh, I'll have to ask my team. I said, you're the prime minister. You don't have... No. I have to ask my team, President. My team has to meet. We're meeting next week. Oh, next week? But the war already started. Next week, it's not good. The war's going to be over in 3 days. France, Macron, whose wife treats him extremely badly. And still recovering from the right to the jaw.
I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? You do wonder whether there's something afoot here, because no normal world leader would make personal comments and issue personal insults to the two leaders of, well, two of the three biggest countries in Europe, people who are supposedly your strongest allies. Yes, I understand his frustration with Keir Starmer and indeed with President Macron over their lack of support for his war in Iran. But perhaps he should have actually sort of told them about it before, at least consulted them about it before he did what he did, because it isn't going that well. It's all very well. World leaders always get frustrated when things aren't going well, but you don't take it out on your main allies, do you? So my question for you this Good Friday, is it time for the Prime Minister to hit back and really stand up to Trump in a way that he hasn't done before? Because I think he's been quite successful in dealing with Donald Trump up until the last few weeks. But things have changed now. Is it time to completely refocus our relationship with the United States? Edward Lucas joins me, international security expert and columnist for The Times. Edward, very good morning. I mean, another extraordinary outburst from the president. I guess we can expect more of this.
Well, Nick, I think you should charge Trump rent, because he's living in your head rent-free at the moment. He's living in all our heads rent-free. And why do we allow this? We know that he is a loudmouth and he's foul-mouthed, that he changes his mind constantly. His words don't really have value. And he's a massive narcissist. He's an attention seeker. So why do we make him the main item on the news? We know he's like this. I think that we're making a big mistake here in playing his game. And what we should be doing is saying America for now is a busted flush. We cannot rely on them to protect us. They do all sorts of strange things. He says all sorts of strange things. Let's get on with the other sensible countries in the world in trying to do what we should have been doing ages ago, which is to do more on defence, more on deterrence, work more closely together, and try and keep ourselves safe and free.
Well, I suppose the reason that we do cover it, the reason we're covering it today, is because if we didn't cover it, we'd be accused of what the broadcast media and the press did with Joe Biden and cover up the President of the United States' frailties. And this is, I think, what he's displaying here is a mental frailty, isn't it?
Yes, I think if you want to every now and again point out that he has the signs of what doctors say is frontal lobe dementia or something like that, and that's very worrying, but you should be covering it as a medical story, not as a news story. And I agree, it was shameful the way the press didn't cover Biden's frailty, and it was shameful the way the Democrats around Biden covered it up. And because of that, I went door knocking in Pennsylvania during the election campaign, trying to stop this disaster of a Trump presidency. And one of the main arguments on the doorstep was the Democrats can't be trusted. So we've had a trust bonfire on our side, on the anti-Trump side. But we are facing absolutely the biggest geopolitical emergency, I think, of all our lifetimes now, with the sort of collapse of NATO, the rise of China, Russia's war in Ukraine, the chaos in the Middle East. And so we've got stuff to do. And what I find extraordinary is that we are not talking about it. And so I respectfully suggest that we start thinking about some other things.
Let's look at the long term here, because all things being equal, Trump will be gone in 2.5 years. How much do we need to think about the short term, and how much should we be thinking about the long term? Because I agree with you that NATO is now under threat in a way that it hasn't been since it started in 1949. But it would be a big thing to throw away. But Europe has got to think about the possible end of NATO, hasn't it?
Yes, I mean, I think we are, for now, we're in a post-NATO era, because in the end, NATO matters chiefly because of the willingness of the American commander-in-chief to go to war on behalf of his allies, his European allies, and Trump said pretty clearly he's not going to do that. So if we had a Russian attack on Norway or wherever, would Trump say, yes, I'm going to war, or would he say, no, I'll phone Putin in the morning, most likely the second. So we're already in a post-NATO era in that sort of terms of outright warfare. But I think that that's still quite unlikely, because Putin would be very loath to go to war even with European NATO. We should be doing a lot more to make that scary prospect for him very scary, so he doesn't do it. I think more important is the war is already raging at what they call the sub-threshold level, things being burnt down, blown up, people being beaten up, cyber attacks, GPS jamming, disrupting our navigation, cables being cut on the seabed, drones going over our North Sea oil fields mysteriously. We don't know why. And this is all a war of nerves, and we're losing it. So I think the first thing we need to do right now is to get together with other countries and work out how we deter Russia, and indeed other countries, from doing these sub-threshold attacks, because they are laying the ground for a much more serious war in future.
Now, you've become quite notorious in the past few weeks because you've got Donald Trump's private phone number, haven't you? You just, like, ring him up and he answers.
I hate to disappoint you, Nick. That is the great Ed Luce of the Financial
Times. You're absolutely right. That's my first mistake of the morning. It won't be the last.
If I can beg your indulgence, please, everyone, do buy Spieg's, his brilliant biography of Spieg Brzezinski, and read. He's a great friend of mine. It's not the first time this has happened. He writes about Trump in the FT. I write about Russia in the Times. It's a very easy mistake to make.
And you're both.
We are actually very distant cousins as well, but that's not why the loose.
Oh, this is all so incestuous, isn't it?
we didn't know we were cousins until we really got together over a beer, and I think we're sort of eighth or ninth cousins, and I think once or twice removed as well. But anyway, enough family history. Can we get back to geopolitics?
I feel less bad about mixing you up now. Thank you very much indeed. That's Edward Lucas, their international security expert and columnist for The Times. Right, I won't mix up our next guest with anybody, I promise. Nicholas Westcott is Professor of Practice in Diplomacy at SOAS University of London and a former British diplomat. Very good morning to you. How do you see the future of the British-American relationship? We're always told it's a special relationship, but that has well and truly been shattered now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was a relationship that was always more special to one side than the other. The UK has been dependent on the US for its security. The US is not very dependent on the UK, though there remains a huge amount of intelligence sharing, which the US do rely on. However, America's allies, one might almost say former allies, are getting used to being roundly insulted. In relation to your previous conversation, Trump makes a habit of insulting those who are dependent on him. He tends to be more respectful about people, his opponents, about Mr. Xi, Mr. Putin. But
how do you account for allies, that? I mean, it's, I mean, just psychologically, that is, it just doesn't happen with any normal person, does it?
No, it's all the symptoms of being a bully. Those who are, you think, weaker than you and dependent on you, you exploit and insulting them. And it's interesting, it's not just the Europeans, it's also now the Arab partners. He was particularly insulting about Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, the other day, which has caused complete outrage there. But again, it's a country that's dependent on the US for its security, so he feels free to do so. But he's a master at losing friends and reducing US influence in the world. But the allies are getting used to the fact that they can no longer rely on the US. The US has become a completely unreliable partner, and therefore the realization has dawned that we have to secure our own defense and our own economic interests. And, of course, Britain alone can't do that. And our only remaining partner, or partners, are European ones, along with other middle powers like Canada, Japan, Korea, Australia. So that's why Britain's diplomacy is sort of cranking up a gear. Just at the time, sadly, they're cutting the Foreign Office.
We might have a little chat about that in a second, but do you think that in the end, though, if he keeps up these insults to Starmer and Macron, and probably others will follow, and just imagine what he might say about the German Chancellor in an off-guard moment, at some point, one of them is just going to lose their patience and hit back, aren't they? What would the consequences of that be, do you think?
That's the problem. They are still very dependent on the US for security and for technology. And that means there is a vulnerability there that if you get into a slanging match, Trump may impose sanctions that will do genuine harm rather than just verbal harm. But it is, so it's the question whether the love actually moment has come where you in public stand up and tell the US this is unacceptable. People thought that the king might do that. I don't think he will. But it will be interesting to see what Trump and King Charles say to each other in public.
Well, it certainly will. Just very briefly, you mentioned cuts to the Foreign Office. That hasn't had a lot of coverage. How deep are these cuts and what will the effects be?
I'm told they will, the next 3 years, cut about 25%, 10 to 25% of total staff worldwide, but particularly in London.
Does that mean the closure of embassies?
That's not clear to me, whether they're actually closing any embassies. I don't know yet. It's mainly staff, I think, rather than the network. But with fewer staff, you can do less. There's been a reduction in the aid program, so some cut was probably inevitable. But it's a question of who they're cutting, whether they're people, you know, with expertise in geopolitics and negotiation, which is what we desperately need.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Nicholas Westcott, Professor of Practice in Diplomacy at SOAS University of London and former British diplomat. Right, we'll come to your calls in a moment. 0345 6060973. We'll also look at the bank holiday travel. 17 minutes past seven, news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Senior executives at Marks and Spencer have called on the Home Secretary and London's Mayor to do more to tackle high street crime. 100 experts in international law have warned of serious violations by the US, Israel and Iran in the conflict in the Middle East. And NASA's Artemis 2 mission is now on its way to the moon after leaving the Earth's gravitational pull. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, sunny spells and showers in northern and eastern areas, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. No Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern services to and from Euston. It's because of the engineering works. It also means the Lioness Line can't run between Wilson Junction and Watford Junction. And no Bakerloo Line services as well between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. No DLR trains running between Poplar and Lewisham, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. On the roads, very busy on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road southbound. Lots of people heading to the airport for the Easter getaway. One lane is closed on the A41 Hendon Way southbound at Cricklewood Lane. That's where a lorry's broken down. And Langley Avenue remains closed eastbound from Worcester Park to North Cheen for the emergency repairs.
This is LBC.
We get it. Making tax digital can sometimes feel daunting, but with Xero's HMRC recognized software, you quickly get to feeling confident. If you're a sole trader or landlord whose income tax is going digital, not only is Xero MTD ready, it also gives you better control of your finances, like having the clear financial visibility you need every quarter to avoid end-of-year tax surprises. Change the way you see MTD. Search MTD ready with Xero.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and relax.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quaterpillar Rowing Boats, Aldous Glaze, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nuthatch Adventure Park. Book now at nuthatch.com.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
20 past 7 on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you at breakfast. I'm doing this show for the next 4 days, so I hope you'll tune in between now and Easter Monday as well. Now, let's run through some of the newspaper and website front pages. Sky News top story, Artemis 2 pilot sends inspiring message as engine burn blasts crew towards moon. The Independent, Trump threatens destruction of bridges and electric power plants in push for Tehran deal. The Times, Miliband set to back North Sea gas field. The Sun, Houston, WEE have a problem. Astronaut 6 hour bust, bust lav hell. What's it, lay hell there? The Daily Star, sticking the loot in. That's about World Cup ticket pricing. We're going to cover that with Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast later. The iPaper, King will warn Trump, don't turn your back on us. And The Guardian, you have to be serious, Macron tells Trump in rebuke over NATO. And that's what we're taking your calls on in this hour. Is it time for the Prime Minister to hit back and stand up to Trump? 0345 6060 973. But first, let's get the latest on the bank holiday travel. Apparently 21 million people on the roads this Good Friday. Joanne Webb, LBC's travel editor, joins us. Busy days for you, Joanne.
Yes, absolutely. And yesterday was predicted to be the busiest, along with today. And yesterday, yep, it was very busy. The usual spots like the M25 anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel was extremely slow. It was more like a Friday rush hour rather than a Thursday. And lots of people are already on the roads. I'm seeing the M4 Heathrow Spur Road extremely busy southbound from the main M4 down to the terminals, because of course lots of people are flying from Heathrow and all the other airports across the country. And also lots of people are heading towards the Channel. In fact, Ian, at the moment there's a 2 hour wait at the Eurotunnel terminal at Folkestone. And because of the amount of people heading down to the Channel crossings, Operation Brock is in place on the M20. What that means is there are eastbound restrictions at Junction 8 at Leeds Castle to control the traffic as well. And lots of engineering works taking place on the trains, but the main engineering works is the West Coast Main Line is not running at all over Easter between Milton Keynes and Euston. So that's a London Northwestern and Avanti West Coast services. So if you need to get into London to Euston from Milton Keynes or any of the stations that they usually stop at between, then you'll have to get a replacement bus service. And that will obviously take a lot longer than the usual train journey as well. And in fact, most companies are running a reduced service across today because it being a bank holiday. So obviously do allow yourself extra time for your journey.
What effect is Storm Dave likely to have on people's travel plans over the Easter weekend? Because, I mean, the way they name these storms is interesting, isn't it? Because Dave is a bit of a macho storm, isn't it? It's not like Storm Isabella that they had.
Yeah, there was some research done a while ago saying when they name these storms like something like Dave, people do go, oh, what's this? Storm Dave? That sounds macho, as you said. So they take more notice, and that's the reason why they give them these various names. So the storm is heading this way tomorrow. It's going to affect North Wales, Northern Ireland, northwest, northeast, northeast of England, and also all of Scotland. Now, what that means is strong winds always causes problems, especially on the trains with the overhead wires coming down, objects flying into the overhead wires. So, yeah, it's definitely going to cause big problems. It's a yellow weather warning at the moment, but that could obviously increase if they expect those winds to be stronger than expected. So various problems are expected. Lots of lorries may overturn as well, because lots of the roads through those areas are quite exposed, so often lorries do overturn. So, yeah, we'll keep you up to date all the way through tomorrow as well when Storm Dave arrives.
Joanne, thank you very much indeed. That's Joanne Webb, LBC's travel editor. Well, let's run through a few texts that you've been sending in about Donald Trump and his insults. The question we're asking, is it time for the Prime Minister to hit back and stand up to Trump? And how do you think the King is going to approach this trip? I mean, this is obviously going to be a big source of conjecture over the course of the next, 26 days, because I think he goes for the last weekend in April. How do you think... Maybe the King will say something to admonish Mr. Trump. I mean, I think it's unlikely because the King doesn't like to involve himself in political wrangles. But I suspect that even he thinks that Trump has gone a little bit too far this time. Albert says, morning Ian, yes, it's time Keir Starmer and other European leaders gave Trump a few home truths. Simon says, Trump is right. Both leaders are weak and clueless. Well, it's a point of view. And Barry says, straight-talking president, a good friend will always tell you the truth. And Iffy says, Trump being living rent-free or not in our heads in the meantime, what are we supposed to do as he abuses everyone publicly? Robert says, in my opinion, our Prime Minister has a great opportunity to become an important voice in the EU and show great leadership in pushing the creation of the United States of Europe. The UK, as part of this new state, will become the partner that the US isn't anymore for the rest of the world. Well, Robert, there is a slight problem there in that we're not actually members of the European Union, so it's quite difficult to imagine how that will happen. And Keir Starmer shows no sign of saying that we would be better off in the EU, which is what I'm sure he thinks, but he won't actually say it. And Tony says, vassals know their place. This idea that the United Kingdom is just a vassal state of the US, I've never thought that was true. We're an independent state, we're a proud nation, we are still the sixth largest economy in the world, and we don't have to take this abuse, even if it is from the world's preeminent superpower. Do we, Colin, in Manchester?
No, we definitely do not. The guy's an absolute buffoon. I'm all about Trump, not Starmer. the thing is, the guy needs to stop watching films that come out of Hollywood, mate, and look at the true history of America. They've never won a war on their own. And the guy's an absolute disgrace because he makes my blood boil every time I hear that man speak. He insults our military. He insults our Prime Minister. The King should turn around to him and say, listen, until you start behaving like a grown-up, you stupid little boy, I'm not coming over to America. And just deal with him like that. Tell him to do one. I nearly swore then, sorry.
You saved yourself very well, if I may say so.
Yeah,
Colin.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's an idiot. The country's... He's got impeachments against him. There's this thing with Epstein hanging over him. The guy sends in his military into Iran without warning any prime minister or whatever title they have in these difficult. He never notified anybody of his actions.
Well, hang on a second, because I mean, to be fair to Donald Trump, and I really do try to be. He's not the first American president to do that. Remember Ronald Reagan in Grenada in 1983. But I think the thing that you said at the beginning of the conversation, that to the effect that he has no sense of history. I think that's absolutely bang on. And those who don't learn the lessons of history repeat the mistakes of history. And that, I think, is at the root of a lot of his problems. And he doesn't even seem to understand the history of what happened in Afghanistan. He didn't even know, really, that that Britain, I think we lost 450 lives in Afghanistan. And yet he effectively insulted our armed forces by saying that we didn't really do an awful lot in Afghanistan. Well, we did.
We did indeed. And it makes me very angry listening to that because, I know people that served over there.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute disgrace. The man just needs standing up to. Just listen, you deal with a bully in one way. You give him a slap, and he needs a slap. But you can't do that physically, obviously, but you can certainly tell the man. Just tell him. Shut up and don't call me until you can behave yourself. Or words to that effect. I'm sure Starmer can come up with something more articulate than I could. I'd just tell the man to do one.
Okay, Colin, thank you very much indeed. I suspect if the Crewkerne Gazette are listening to that call, if you follow them on social media, they will at this moment be making an AI film about Donald Trump being slapped, probably with a wet fish, by Keir Starmer. 0345 6060 973. Is it time for the Prime Minister to hit back and stand up to Trump? And if he did, I mean, let's pose this as a thing that he actually does. If he makes a speech, a very hard-hitting speech, where he stands up to Trump, what would the consequences be? And I think everyone would be cheering him on if he did that. But the dopamine hit, would it be worth it? What would the long-term consequences of that be? 0345 6060 973. It's time for the news headlines on LBC at 7:30. Here's Dominic Ellis.
Senior executives at Marks & Spencer have called on the Home Secretary and the Mayor of London to do more to tackle high street crime. The intervention comes after an M&S store was among shops targeted in Clapham earlier this week in several incidents of disorder. 100 experts in international law have warned of serious violations by the United States, Israel and Iran in the conflict in the Middle East. The open letter says the rhetoric and conduct of the US is concerning and could amount to war crimes in some instances. And NASA's Artemis 2 mission has left Earth's orbit on the first crewed journey to the moon for more than 50 years. Overnight, the four astronauts on board the Ariane spacecraft fired its engine to free the capsule from Earth's gravitational pull. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, some sunny spells and showers in the north and east, a high of 16 degrees.
This is LBC. Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Lidl, get everyone around the table this Easter with fresh veg from only 4p each. With cracking prices on British Swedes, parsnips, 1 kilogram of carrots and 2 kilograms of potatoes for 8p. And more. That's sure to put a spring in your step. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability. Selected stores, GB only.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means
you have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has
automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
7.33 on LBC. Paul says, let's all buy Bruce Springsteen songs and take him to number one. That will wind Trump up. It probably would, actually, because he was insulting Bruce Springsteen yesterday. I mean, how can you insult the boss? What a ridiculous thing to do. Abdel says, shame on the UK, only country in Europe extremely confused. We have traitors like Nigel Farage and Liz Truss who sack up after the US like their citizenship means nothing. We act like prostitutes. That is what we now face in the, we now face the EU or the US. Well, it's a point of view, I suppose. 0345 6060 973. Is it time for the Prime Minister to hit back and stand up to Trump? And what would happen if he did? I mean, if he made remarks like Donald Trump made yesterday, how do you think that would go down, not just with Trump, but in the United States more generally? Come back to your calls in a moment. But first, let's see what's happening in the world of business with Anna McDonald, investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management. Anna, very good morning. Let's start off with a couple of stories from the Mail. UK firms fear inflation hit. Well, it seems inevitable that inflation is going to rise quite dramatically.
Yes. At the beginning of the year, this survey by the Bank of England, which is a monthly one, said that businesses thought there'd be maybe a 3% increase in inflation. That's now up at 3.5%. And I think that's all to do with the war in Iran. And again, also, they did say that they were thinking that unemployment might also be rising. And I think that's also with these firms trying to cope with rising costs of employment and perhaps a cooling demand outlook as everything gets more expensive.
Now, tell us about these drug tariffs that we're apparently going to avoid.
Yes, so this has been a long time in the making. The US and the UK have come to an agreement that will exempt the UK for 3 years for any tariffs on the medicines sent over to the US. And also, the in return, the UK are going to reduce a rebate that they pay to firms. So basically pay more for medicines. And this has been demanded by firms for quite a long time because they've said that it's not been a very competitive place to develop medicines. They've been scaling back on their investments in the UK and on their staff. So this is good news for the longer term in terms of being able to ensure that we keep those good investments here in the UK. Interestingly, the US and the UK have also agreed to work together with their regulators working together to do medical tech approvals. Now, that could be really good. It keeps the UK, which is very strong in its life sciences, it keeps them at the table in developing new drugs and new technologies.
Now, turkey we all have for lunch at Christmas. Apparently, lamb is what we're all supposed to eat at Easter, which I have to say, I never knew that. But apparently, lamb prices are going through the roof.
Yeah, there's a few reasons. Lamb is getting more and more expensive every year. There are fewer ewes out there breeding, and it's a supply issue there, and it's also a demand issue. As you say, people like to eat it for Easter, and this year that Easter is falling very soon after Ramadan, and it's also a very popular meat to eat at the end of Ramadan. So there's been higher demand. And the strange thing is that as the lamb prices go up, farmers are tempted to sell more of next year's breedings, what would be next year's breeding stock, because the prices are high. So yes, lamb is 12.5% more expensive than last year. If you're looking for a cheaper meat for your Easter table, I would say that pork fat prices seem to be flat to slightly down, and actually they're always, pork and chicken are always cheaper anyway.
And finally, the Ryanair boss, Michael O'Leary, he's been at it again, blaming Brexit for everything.
Yeah, he was an obvious proponent of Remain in the referendum, and he's still talking about it. They are going to fly 61 million Britons overseas for their summer holidays this year, and he is very concerned that the new entry and exit system that all passengers are having to go through is going to cause huge delays, and it's not being managed well. And he's saying why don't you postpone the introduction of this new system until the summer rush is over, until September? It needs to be in by October, but he said, why not move it to September rather than subjecting passengers to what might be queues of as much as 4 hours to get to your into your holiday through your holiday airport.
Anna, how are you spending Easter apart from talking to me?
I'm going to be enjoying myself, although I'm in Edinburgh, and I'm going to be probably battening down the hatches because I see we've got a yellow warning of wind and snow.
Not quite
the normal Easter, and I think we might have an inside Easter egg hunt.
Well, stay listening, because in about 3 minutes we're going to get an update on what Storm Dave will mean for the good denizens of Edinburgh and elsewhere where it's going to affect people. Thank you very much indeed. That's Anna McDonald there, investment manager at Aubrey Capital Management. Right, before we talk about the weather, let's take a call from Brian in Glasgow, who wants to talk about Donald Trump. Hello, Brian.
Oh, hi, Ian. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Not at all. What would you like to say?
I think Donald Trump should follow one of his own countrymen's best advice. Mark Twain once famously said, it's better to keep your mouth shut and appear stupid than open it and remove all doubt.
Never say that to a talk radio presenter.
Now, I think Starmer is his strategy for dealing with Trump is correct. He's ignoring Trump, and that does wind up Trump and actually makes him worse. But of course, Trump being a narcissist, as we all know, he's probably only going to get worse. But what I think he does is he just makes himself look more stupid, and I think Mark Twain got it absolutely right.
Do you think he cares? I mean, do you think he actually understands how he is perceived elsewhere?
No, because he lives in a bubble. He's surrounded by other sycophants who tell him what he wants to hear. And when you live in that and operate in that sort of echo chamber, they're telling him he's the best thing since sliced bread. And yeah, because he is a narcissist, he believes it. He's not going to question himself. He'll question everybody else. He'll doubt everybody else, but he will never doubt himself.
I just wonder if there is anybody in the White House, in the administration, who is able to speak truth unto power and tell Donald Trump, no, you've got this wrong, Mr. President. This will not stand, because I don't see any evidence of anybody doing that.
I think there's only one person who probably could do it, and that's his wife, Melania. I think if she was to put her foot down, as they say, I think he probably would do something then. But I don't see anybody else doing it. As I say, he surrounded himself with yes men, and that was all part of the strategy. The first time when he was president, he had adults in the room. He had people who were professional diplomats, professional soldiers. This time, he's just surrounded himself with, you know, people who used to work for Fox News. You know, so it really tells you all you need to know.
Well, I think you're talking about Pete Hegseth, the Secretary for War. Somebody has just texted me here. This is Steve in Dorset, who says, as Pete Hegseth announces another firing of a top army general, Randy George, is this another sign that even their own people are against the administration? We need to stand up to this interfering, often wrong bully and call him out, just like Iran are doing. Every time Trump spouts out a lie about a peace deal, they counter it with the truth. Well, I didn't know about this firing of an army general, but again, that may be a sign that you're right, Brian.
Yeah, General George, that was because Pete Hegseth overturned a decision where a crew of a helicopter, an army helicopter, flew over Kid Rock's house, and he put it on social media. The army then had said, well, you know, that's actually an illegal act, flying your helicopter that low, so we're going to discipline you. And Pete Hegseth jumped in and said, no, you're not, sort of thing. And General George then said, well, look, you're undermining my position. So that left him really in an untenable position.
I hereby appoint you our Pentagon correspondent.
Pete Hegseth, you've got to laugh at Pete. I mean, the hypocrisy and the irony of the man. Last week he was talking about the Iranian leadership going underground and only rats live underground. Pete Hegseth actually moved into a military camp because he said he was getting death threats. So, again, it's the hypocrisy of Trump and his sycophants. It's okay for them to say, it's okay for me, but not for thee.
Yeah. Brian, thank you very much indeed. Great call. It's Brian in Glasgow there, informing us about what's going on in the Pentagon. Well, let's talk to Claire Nazir, who's going to inform us what's going on with the weather. Storm Day, she's a meteorologist and broadcaster. Claire, very good morning to you. Happy Good Friday, if I can say that. What's going to be happening to the country over the next few days with regard to Storm Dave?
Hello there. Good morning, Ian. Yes, it's coming in during the first part of Saturday to Northern Ireland. You'll see some rain and the wind will pick up. Elsewhere, probably a bright start to the day. Not bad at all. Bit of hazy sunshine. It's really the afternoon where this the centre of this storm really makes itself known across Northern Ireland with gales, severe gales and some heavy rain. At this point, the first rain is actually over Scotland, hitting some colder air and we could see some snow. So a bit of everything, in fact, on Saturday. For central and eastern areas of England and Wales, you'll just have a breezy, if not windy day and some bright weather. But it's the strength of the wind through Saturday evening and overnight, which is of great concern because we're expecting gales, severe gales. Gusts could reach 70 miles an hour or even higher than that. So there are warnings across Northern Ireland, but also North Wales, Northern England, the whole of Scotland, and a snow warning for the north and northwest of Scotland, where for a time there could be some heavy snow with blizzards. Let me just talk you through the impacts that could happen. Rail journeys are going to be affected, ferry services as well. Some roads and bridges will be closed. We saw Storm Amy last October, and there were about 40,000 people without power across Scotland, and there could be power cuts this time as well. Damage to buildings, some tiles could fall off, so flying debris, and that obviously causes injuries and a danger to life. And high waves, that's a real biggie for people who are planning to perhaps step out even into Sunday morning. There'll be some very high waves around. The only good news really about this system, it's tracking very quickly. So by Easter Day, Sunday, it's really the far northeast of Scotland seeing those really strong winds, those damaging winds. It'll be windy elsewhere with some showers, but by then the wind would have lost its sting further south. And the best day of the bank holiday for everyone will be Easter Monday. So this is coming right across the sort of central part of a weekend. I know people have plans to be out and about, so it's just sort of staying up to date with the forecast.
Claire, thank you very much indeed. And you can stay up to date with the forecast throughout the Easter weekend here on LBC. That's Claire Nazir, their meteorologist and broadcaster. Well, in a moment, we're going to be talking to Reform UK's Robert Jenrick, their Shadow Treasury spokesman. And he's going to tell us why they've changed their policy on the pensions triple lot. They were going to abolish it and now they're going to keep it. Why the change of heart? And we'll maybe take a couple more calls on Donald Trump. 0345 6060 973 746. And we've got the news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Marks & Spencer's retail director has called on the Home Secretary to do more to tackle high street crime. President Trump has warned there's much more to follow after the United States bombed Iran's largest bridge. And the Orion capsule carrying astronauts on board the Artemis 2 mission is now officially on its way to the moon. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas. Sunny spells and showers for the north and east. A high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Avanti West Coast and London North Western aren't running to and from Euston from Milton Keynes. Various replacement bus services in place, but they'll obviously take a lot longer than your usual train journey. And the Lioness Line can't run as a result between Wilson Junction and Watford Junction. And no Bakerloo Line trains between Stonebridge Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. Also, no DLR trains between Poplar and Lewisham, but that's because of an ongoing investigation. Very busy on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road from the main M4 down to the terminals as people head away for their Easter break. The A41 Hendon Way slow southbound at Cricklewood Lane, and that's where a lorry's broken down. And at Worcester Park, Langley Avenue remains closed eastbound for the emergency repairs.
This is LBC.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre.
Price from 34495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, OK. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
OK, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to 100,000 euros per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep. Where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
This is LBC. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
10 to 8 on LBC. Now, the pensions triple lock is something that I think everybody has a view on. We did a phone-in on it on my show last night, and I think it is one of those issues that really divides people. But I've always thought that there are many politicians who, when the microphone is on, say, yes, of course we're committed to keeping the pensions triple lock. And when the microphone goes off, they say, well, of course we know that it was never meant to be permanent. And but all of the political parties have now, all of the main political parties, I would say, are committed to keeping the pensions triple lock. The Greens say that they would have a double lock. They would take out the 2.5% part of it. And I mean, just to explain, the triple lock was introduced in 2011 under David Cameron and George Osborne. And that meant the state pension rises each year in line with either inflation, wage increases, or 2.5%, whichever is the highest. And it's predicted that by 2030, this commitment will be costing £15.5 billion. Well, Reform UK have now said that they would cut the benefits bill by billions of pounds to offset the cost of keeping the triple lock on state pensions if the party was in power. I'm joined now by the Reform Treasury spokesperson, MP for Newark, Robert Jenrick. Robert, very good morning. You're the only political party to be taking part in the morning round today, so congratulations for working on a bank holiday.
Thank you, Ian.
Now, why this change of heart? Because Nigel Farage, up until now, has always been against keeping the pensions triple lock. Have you persuaded him otherwise?
Well, I don't think he was against keeping it. He was very conscious of how costly it is and how weak the state of our public finances are right now. You know, we're really in a mess at the moment, and there's every chance that we could have a fiscal crisis in the years ahead if we don't bring down public spending. So if you make a big commitment like this, you've got to think carefully about it, and you've got to be certain that you can fund it, particularly when you're making a promise to pensioners. You want to keep that. And that's why we took our time and had an internal debate about it before coming to the conclusion that we should take it forwards. And we've thought carefully about how we would fund it. And we set out that detail in the last few weeks, ensuring that we no longer pay foreign aid to rich countries, that we don't pay universal credit benefits to those people who aren't British citizens, that we really bear down on, in fact, eradicate most of the net zero subsidies, which we believe are wasteful and actually harmful to British interests, and that we take action on welfare. and particularly on the welfare that's going to people who are either choosing not to work or who have very mild conditions like mild anxiety, mental health concerns, where it would be much better that we got those people into the workplace and that they could have the dignity, frankly, that comes with work rather than remaining out of the workplace. It's through making those choices that we're able to guarantee that we can do this in the years ahead. And I think that's the right choice, because it's not in life just a straightforward, do you want to support young people or do you want to support older people? You know, there are ways in which we can balance the generations fairly, and that's why we want to take this forwards.
Do you think the contract with younger people over the past couple of decades has actually been shattered? Because there was a time when you were a teenager, when I was a teenager, I'm obviously much older than you, but there was this sort of idea that you would be able to get a mortgage, that you would be able to secure employment, and you would be able to sort of have a bit of money left at the end of the month to save maybe for your old age. That contract has been shattered, hasn't it?
It has. I really believe that the social contract has been shredded, and it's on so many different levels, as you say, but it's mostly around housing. The cost of rent at the moment, anywhere in the country, but particularly in our biggest cities, and the ability to get on the housing ladder has transformed, even from when I was starting out in the workplace 20 years ago, and certainly compared to my parents' generation, it is a different country. We've got to change that. I want us to be a country whereby people can get on the housing ladder, you know, start a family, put down roots in their community, and that will mean building a lot more homes. It does mean bringing down migration as well, because about 80 or 90% of the deficit of new homes in this country is as a result of the numbers who've come in over the last 25 years. But it is about building new homes, and I've committed reform to being a party which is going to get the country building again, particularly in the big cities, and that's critical.
Now, how can the electorate have confidence in you when you say you want to cut welfare benefits? And I think you're going to lay out the detail of that in the next few weeks. I mean, all political parties go into an election saying, look, the benefits bill has mushroomed out of control. We've got to a point now where we're spending more on benefits than we take in income tax, which I find an incredible statistic. How can you reassure people that you are actually going to do it? Because Labour promised to do this, and at the first whiff of gunshot, they reneged on it.
Well, Reform is a party of working people. You know, we've very clearly chosen a side, which is that we're on the side of Alarm Clock Britain, the people who are getting up in the morning and going out to work. We're not on the side of people who are choosing to be out of work. And so we're going to be very, very tough on that and bear down on the welfare bill. We've already set out some very significant savings, actually, saying that people can't claim PIP for, as I say, things like mild anxiety, the mental health claims where people really should be being in work, that you need to have an in-person assessment by a proper clinician before you can benefit from that kind of welfare. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. And then what we're going to be saying more about in the coming weeks is the cost to the country of the large number of people who came in the last years of the Conservative government, what's known as the Boris wave. We've been costing that, and I think people will be shocked when they learn the enormity of the cost of that in the years to come, because most of those people were not in work, and those who were are mostly low-wage, low-skilled individuals who will cost hundreds of thousands of pounds, perhaps more, each to the country. And Reform is going to be setting out not just what we think that's costing, but what we should do about it. Because it's only by bearing down on that we're able to make big commitments like the triple lock for our pensioners.
We're talking about Donald Trump and his insults to Keir Starmer and President Macron yesterday. What's your view on this? Do you think this has gone beyond the normal cut and thrust of political banter? Because it is our main ally consistently insulting our own Prime Minister, and you don't have to be a Labour Party supporter to find that deeply worrying.
Well, I don't like to see foreign leaders berating the leader of the United Kingdom, regardless of which party he or she is. You want our Prime Minister to be somebody who is respected on the world stage and is treated with respect by our main ally. So, look, I don't like that. The relationship between Keir Starmer and Donald Trump has clearly taken a massive blow, probably irreparably so. Part of that is the fact that the Prime Minister initially chose not to make our bases available to the United States for this action. But I'm not here to defend Donald Trump or the way he conducts himself. Far from it. What I want to see happen now is this war come to an end, because I'm mostly concerned about the impact it's having on people's living standards here in the UK. And that's clearly very, very damaging. And every day that this continues, it's making it harder for everybody to heat their homes, to fill up at the petrol pumps, for businesses to provide the energy that they need at a sensible price. And so we in Reform are urging Donald Trump to bring this war to a conclusion as quickly as possible, and think we should be very cautious as a country before getting involved in foreign wars in distant parts of the world.
Just finally, you're a former housing secretary. Nigel Farage has had to fire your housing spokesperson, Simon Dudley, for some pretty awful remarks about the people dying in the Grenfell fire. What does that say about Reform?
Well, I thought they were very insensitive and shocking remarks, and he's gone as a result. That's strong leadership. You know, I think it was right that Nigel took action as swiftly as he did. If you look at the Prime Minister, you know, we've still got Lucy Powell, the deputy leader, in a prominent position, who said that it was dog whistle politics to talk about the grooming gang scandal. She should have been fired for that. That was weak leadership. So Nigel showed leadership. But I thought those remarks were deeply, deeply insensitive and wrong, and it was right that he's no longer the spokesperson for Reform.
There are people in your party who think, well, this is a sign of Reform going woke, sacking somebody for saying something that may have been insensitive, incendiary or whatever, but we do have free speech, and they think that he shouldn't have been sacked.
I haven't met any of those people. Everybody I've spoken to felt that these remarks were completely out of order, and you can't have somebody as a spokesperson for a political party who goes around saying things like that. Look, is there a point to be made that after tragedies, sometimes the regulation that is put in is either overzealous or even counterproductive? Yes. I think it's too early to say that with respect to what's happened post-Grenfell, because as I remember from the conversations that I had after that tragedy, the regulatory regime was absolutely appalling, and the failures were massive and systemic after in terms of building safety. And it's right that that is completely addressed. The regulator that was created does seem to have been very bureaucratic, and that has slowed down the building of new homes, particularly high-rise ones in our big cities. But you can have that serious debate about the regulatory regime without saying crass and insensitive comments. And that's where we obviously draw the line, like most people would.
Robert, thank you very much indeed. That's Robert Jenrick, Reform UK's Treasury spokesperson and MP for Newark. You're listening to LBC. In the next hour, we're going to be talking about the fact that the SNP has done a policy U-turn now, and they're now backing further North Sea drilling. It's 1 minute past eight.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, senior bosses at Marks & Spencer have called on the Home Secretary and London's Mayor to do more to tackle high street crime. The intervention comes after an M&S store was among shops targeted in Clapham earlier this week. Six arrests have been made following disorder involving large groups of teenagers in southwest London. Vicky Shotbolt is from the group Parent Zone and has spoken to LBC.
The answer is probably familiar. It's everybody's responsibility, but of course parents take a really important role in this, because they do need to be asking their young people where they're going, what they're doing. They need to understand who they're hanging out with. All of those things are true and have always been true. But then so do social media platforms need to take their share of responsibility. It's another one of those boring but familiar answers. We all have a role to play.
The Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, says he will continue to work with police to tackle the issue. The Home Office says it is giving police stronger powers. President Trump has warned the US will step up its attacks on Iran's infrastructure if leaders don't agree on his terms to end the war. The United States and Israel have carried out further strikes in the last few hours, the key bridge in Tehran among the targets. 100 legal experts in the US have signed an open letter expressing their concerns over potential breaches of international law during the conflict. The Energy Secretary Ed Miliband is reportedly set to approve the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. Ministers have been facing increasing political pressure in recent weeks to increase drilling during the war in Iran. Earlier this week, the Chancellor said that she would be happy to back exploration at Rosebank oil field and Jackdaw gas field. A government spokesman says no decision on either project's been made. The Orion capsule carrying the astronauts aboard the Artemis II mission is now officially on its way to the moon. The four astronauts on board fired its engine overnight to free the capsule from Earth's gravitational pull. Laurie Glaze leads the program and has given this update.
For the first time since 1972, during Apollo 17, human beings have left Earth orbit. From this point forward, the laws of orbital mechanics are going to carry our crew to the moon, around the far side, and back to Earth.
And thousands of Easter rail journeys will be disrupted today by a partial closure of the West Coast Main Line. The six-day shutdown between London Euston and Milton Keynes is to allow for major upgrades. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas through Good Friday. Some sunny spells and showers in the north and in the east. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
A little something for spring is coming your way from Tesco Mobile. A £100 gift card. It's yours with the Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra with unlimited data for £54.99 a month with club card prices, saving you £522. So switch today to enjoy a little extra this spring. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. End 17th of May. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 5 minutes past eight on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until ten. Simon has texted in. I do love reading your text. This is a corker. That interview with Robert Jenrick has done nothing to dispel the suspicion that you've switched from supporting the Tories to backing reform. You may deny it. You possibly don't even realise it yet. Thank you for being so patronising, Simon. Always, always a pleasure. If I was going to switch my allegiances to vote for Reform UK, LBC listeners would be the first to know. But as I've repeatedly said, that will never happen. However, talking of U-turns, the government seemed to be involved in a U-turn on drilling in the North Sea. As you heard in the news there, Ed Miliband seems, and this is the front page of the Times, Miliband set to back North Sea gas field. That's the Jackdaw field. Rachel Reeves also last week said that she would have absolutely no objection to more drilling in the North Sea. And we now find out that the SNP are reversing their opposition to further oil and gas exploration in the North Sea, saying that the Iran war has changed the balance of the arguments. Now, speaking at a Hollywood election hustings, the Scottish First Minister said energy security had to be taken into account when deciding whether developments such as Rosebank oil field and the Jackdaw gas project were allowed to proceed. Both have been in legal limbo since a court demanded in January last year that new environmental assessments needed to be carried out. Mr. Swinney said it was important these climate-compatible assessments went ahead, but said the projects should be permitted if the oil and gas they produced had a lower carbon footprint than imports. Well, that seems to be the crucial argument here. Now, according to the article in the Times, the Jackdaw gas field, the gas from that, could be online this winter. I mean, oil field drilling obviously takes quite a long time to come on stream, but this could be ready for this winter, and it could, I'm trying to find this statistic here, it could essentially fuel 6% of British homes with gas this winter. Well, what's not to like about that? So do you back these U-turns, seemingly both from the government and indeed the Scottish government? 0345 6060 973. Because the argument against it is, well, the Iran war proves that we mustn't be so reliant on fossil fuels. We need to redouble our efforts to make sure that we have 100% of our energy supplied by renewables. And that may be a worthy ambition. And I've got absolutely nothing against renewables at all. But to me, you need to have different aspects to your energy basket. So nuclear has to play a part, renewables plays a part, but also gas and oil play a part and will continue to do so. And if we've got the oil and gas in the North Sea, why on earth wouldn't we exploit it? Now, it's not going to bring bills down, certainly not in the immediate future, but the tax revenues it brings in could help the government to subsidise people who can't afford their fuel bills at the moment. That, to me, is the logic. What do you think? 0345 6060 973. Angela Knight joins me, former Chief Executive of Energy UK and Economic Secretary to the Treasury. Angela, thanks for coming on this Good Friday morning. You were on Cross Question the other day. We talked about this then. I'm assuming that you welcome this change of heart.
Yes, I do. And good morning and happy Good Friday to everybody, if that's the right expression. I appreciate exactly the points that you've been making, Ian, that we're going to have oil and gas for many, many years to come. It's got to be there as part of the mix of our energy consumption in the UK, and it makes much more sense to get what we can locally rather than ship it in from overseas. People are concerned about carbon footprints, and that's right. And logic also would dictate that the carbon footprint of something that you're extracting locally is actually going to be less in total than something that you've got to transport halfway around the world. I mean, one unit of natural gas, predominantly methane, is the same wherever you get it from. But that transport cost is there as a big question. And therefore, the reality of keeping our own energy security as much as we can, control of it as much as we can, is a very important thing. And I hope that Miliband has at last seen the light on this.
Well, certainly John Swinney seems to have seen the light on it, which I think, I mean, having been to Aberdeen a couple of years ago, it was just before the election campaign, and I remember speaking to an Aberdonian taxi driver and saying, look, what do you think is going to happen to jobs in Aberdeen if Labour get in? And, well, he came out with an expletive, which I can't repeat on the radio at this time of the morning. So I think people in Aberdeen are going to sort of rejoice over this. And, of course, the whole Scottish economy is geared towards the North Sea oil industry, isn't it? And you can't just cut it off, as some people on the, shall we say, green side of the debate seem to want to do.
That's right. I mean, Scotland is also heavily into renewables, both onshore and offshore wind. Obviously, that is because of the climatic conditions in Scotland does mean that they can do energy from the renewables as well as from the oil and gas. But there's something else that is important about the oil and gas, and that is that if one starts to read what the experts say about what is available in the North Sea, there's a lot of commentary about if we grant new licences, then that means that you can refresh some of the old oil and gas fields. You can get more out of existing ones, and you can find new ones. Now, what that tells me is that some of this decline in pulling our oil and gas out of the North Sea has not been managed as well as it should. And that is because of this no more licences and everything's going green policy. And I think that, therefore, whilst I wholly support Rosebank and Jackdaw being given their licences, one oil and one gas, as you've already said, I think actually what needs to happen as well is a review of this whole area of how we manage the decline of the North Sea. Because the renewables, however green they may be, and absolutely fine, but there's a few things that people forget about them. Firstly, that they're intermittent, and you need something that you can start up quickly when the wind stops blowing. That actually isn't nuclear. Nuclear provides the baseload. I'm all in favour of it, but it's a baseload. It doesn't start and stop quickly. So that means that we are going to have to stick with gas. And the second thing that people often don't put into the equation is that when we built our grid as a country, we built it straight down the centre of the country with branches off. Down the centre of the country because that's where the coal fields were, And of course, that's why all the big industrial cities are straight down the country. So as you build your new renewables, your wind farms or whatever, you have to alter the grid as well. So that adds another big cost in it. And so you're adding on the cost of building your renewable, the cost of altering the grid. You've then got the green policies that sit on both people's bills and, most importantly, industry bills. I want to touch on that if I may.
Well, we're slightly running out of time, Angela.
The whole thing is extremely expensive. Review that energy policy, reduce the add-ons, and do something about the huge costs that British industry is paying, because we are deindustrializing some of our main manufacturing areas by this policy.
Angela, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Angela Knight there, former Chief Executive of Energy UK. Now, there is, of course, another side to this argument, and that's going to be put forward by Tessa Khan, founder and director of Uplift, which has campaigned against new licences for oil and gas fields in the UK. Tessa, very good morning.
Good morning, Ian.
Now, I imagine you're feeling slightly depressed this morning when you read this article on the front page of the Times on Miliband set to back North Sea gas field, and indeed the reverse ferret by John Swinney from the SNP.
Well, I mean, it sounds like the decision by Ed Miliband is yet to be made, so we're still hopeful that, you know, he'll come to the sensible conclusion, which is that the Jackdaw gas field will, as you said yourself, do nothing to bring down people's energy bills, which is the real concern for millions of people up and down the country at the moment, and will actually do vanishingly small amounts to support energy security in the UK as well. You know, over the course of Jackdaw's lifetime, which is about a decade, it's only going to produce about 2% of the UK's gas demand. And that is indicative of just how little... Well, it's indicative, though, of, first of all, just how little gas there is left in the North Sea. There's analysis that shows that 14 years of licensing under the last government, which, you know, did everything in its power to incentivize North Sea oil and gas extraction, has produced 36 days worth of gas for the country. That's over 14 years. And what we need right now are real solutions for a crisis today, not a distraction that will breed complacency. You know, there's been a huge amount of focus on the North Sea as a solution to the very serious crisis we're in now, and it's just not going to help people at all.
Well, the second paragraph of this Times story, it says that Jackdaw could produce the equivalent of 6% of the UK's future gas supply. Well, that is not to be sniffed at. And what about the argument that you need a wide range in your energy basket? You can't just rely 100% on renewables.
I mean, that 6% figure is at the point at which Jackdaw's production is at its peak. But as I said, you know, this is a gas field that runs for years, and the average over the course of that is closer to 2%.
So what? That's not an argument, is it? That really isn't an argument.
Well, it is if what we're dealing with is an affordability crisis, first and foremost, and we know that these new gas fields aren't going to do anything to bring down people's bills. A new oil field like the Rosebank oil field, you know, more to the point, that's most of what's left in the North Sea Basin at the moment is oil. About 80% of our reserves in the North Sea are now oil. And more than 80% of that is exported to international markets. And that's, again, why...
That's not a reason not to exploit it, because you get all of the tax revenues in, which, if a government chooses to, can then use that tax money to cut people's bills. Well, I don't understand this argument that we should just cut off all oil and gas exploration.
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is that certainly we're not advocating for stopping extraction in the North Sea today. We currently have hundreds of oil and gas fields that are currently producing, and that'll continue for many years to come. On the question of tax, Ian, you know, the reality is that the oil and gas industry, because the North Sea is a ultra-mature basin that's been in depletion for the last two decades, they are lobbying incredibly hard for tax breaks and insisting that the government, for example, get rid of the windfall tax on oil and gas producers in order, as a condition, for them to continue to invest in the basin. So a company like Shell, which is actually behind the Jackdaw gas field, paid negative amounts of tax to the UK Treasury in 2018, in 2021 and 2024. And that's because our tax system currently provides enormous rebates to these companies. It is not a reliable source of tax revenue, certainly in a crisis like this when, you know, if you look at the fossil fuel crisis caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the the UK government ended up paying more than £50 billion to support ordinary people with their household energy bills. And that is the reality of a fossil fuel-based energy system and why we need to move as quickly as we can away from it towards true energy independence and affordable energy for ordinary people.
Tessa, thank you very much indeed. That's Tessa Khan, founder and director of Uplift, obviously campaigning against new licences for oil and gas fields in the UK. What do you think? Do you think that this U-turn, and it is a U-turn if the government does implement this by Ed Miliband and Rachel Reeves, and indeed the Scottish government under John Swinney, do you welcome this and think, yeah, if we've got reserves of gas and oil in the North Sea left to exploit, then we should absolutely do so? Or do you think it is sending a signal that the government isn't 100% serious about its renewables policies? 0345 6060 973. Let's get the news headlines at 8:18 with Dominic Ellis.
Marks & Spencer's retail director has called on the Home Secretary to do more to tackle high street crime. President Trump has warned there's much more to follow after the United States bombed Iran's largest bridge. And the Orion capsule carrying astronauts on board the Artemis 2 mission is now officially on its way to the moon. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, sunny spells and showers for the north and east, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M1 is closed southbound between junctions 11 at Dunstable South to junction 10 at Luton Airport. It's following a serious accident. It's going to be closed for some time, so if you're heading that way to Luton Airport, do allow yourself extra time. The A13 at Barking's very busy westbound after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. The A41 Hendon Way slow southbound, heading down towards Cricklewood Lane. A lorry's broken down and only one lane is open. No West Coast mainline services running between Milton Keynes and Euston. So that's Avanti West Coast and London North Western. It's for the engineering works. And no DLR trains running between Poplar and Lewisham. And that's because of an ongoing investigation.
This is LBC.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Café Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only two codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
LBC.
At Lidl, get everyone around the table this Easter with fresh veg from only 4p each. With cracking prices on British Swedes, parsnips, 1 kilogram of carrots and 2 kilograms of potatoes for 8p. And more. That's sure to put a spring in your step. Lidl. More to value. Subject to availability. Selected stores GB only.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you've saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm, we'll take 2 scoops per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
22 minutes past 8 on LBC. We're talking about oil and gas exploration in the North Sea because the government and the Scottish government seem to be U-turning on their absolute opposition to new gas and oil fields in the North Sea. Why do you think that is? Do you approve it? Do you welcome this U-turn? Or do you think, no, they should have stuck to their guns because climate change is the all-important issue of our time? And this, well, it doesn't just send the wrong signal. It proves that governments are not serious about our climate change commitments. Lots and lots of texts coming in. Kevin says, what's the point in drill, baby, drill, like the US? Petrol prices in the US have gone up 30% since the war. Tony says, to not exploit the oil and gas in the North Sea is insane. And Andrew says, the new gas field will not bring prices down in the UK. It will be sold on the international markets. Even Kemi has finally admitted so. But that's not an argument for not drilling for new oil and gas fields, is it? Because surely, I think everyone agrees that if we continue along the current rate of exploration, there will be several billion pounds a year in tax revenues each year to the Exchequer. Now, it's up to the government what they do with that money. It could be used to reduce bills for people on low incomes. It could be. I'm not saying it would be. But why wouldn't you want that tax income? I've never understood. I mean, people just can't explain that one away, can they? Maybe you can. Maybe you can convince me. 0345 6060 973. John is in Welwyn Garden City. Hello, John.
Hello, Ian. How are you? All right?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
I just think it's madness, the whole kind of net zero stuff, when we're looking at the oil and gas and importing oil and gas. I think we should be going nuclear all the way, and we get so little support for nuclear, yet it's the safest, most energy-dense power generation that we have. And you get such a bad rub in the press all the time. I mean, there's regulation in the nuclear industry stifling the nuclear generation progress in terms of new power stations. One of the current power stations going on at the moment, the regulations insist on radiation levels inside of the nuclear power plant being less than those out in the car park. It's an absolute nonsense that we're not going down the nuclear because it satisfies the carbon problem as well.
Well, the problem is that the last two governments, the Blair Brown government, the Cameron, May, Johnson, Truss and Sunak government, they sold the pass on this. And because you can't just build a nuclear power station and expect it to generate power within a couple of years, it can take 20 years. So the fact that no new ones were commissioned in those, or very few new ones were commissioned in that period, that means we are where we are. So yes, we can commission new ones now, but they won't come on stream until 2045 or something.
Well, but that's not actually correct, Ian. I mean, the way we do it, that's correct. 20 years, £40 billion. Look at the South Koreans. They've now installed 8 of their new reactors in 8 years for £4 to £6 billion. You know, we should be following that. And it's about regulation. Regulation is stifling the nuclear progress. And it's just crazy. I mean, the whole gas supply, we've got gas in the North Sea that could be online by the winter, yet we're paying other countries not only to get the gas, but to liquefy it, stick it on boats that use the bunker fuel, which is the worst type of fuel for carbon emissions, and transport it here, and then we've got to regas it. And, you know, it's absolute nonsense what we're doing with the North Sea in terms of not opening it up. We absolutely should be opening it up. But nuclear is the absolute way forward. People are worried about carbon. Nuclear is basically carbon-free, and it can be done very cheaply in terms of the way we do it can be done much quicker. 8 years for a Korean reactor.
Even the Liberal Democrats have come around to nuclear power because they were viciously against it all the way through. But even they now think that nuclear has to form part of our energy basket. And these small-scale nuclear reactors, I think they may well be part of the way forward. John, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, before we come back to your calls on this, let's have a word about the Artemis 2 expedition, because the spacecraft is orbiting the Earth at the moment. I think they're going higher than any other human being has ever been. Now, the Canadian astronaut, Jeremy Hansen, gave this update to Mission Control after NASA's Artemis 2 mission completed its next major milestone, firing its rockets to break out of Earth's orbit.
crew's feeling pretty good up here on our way to the moon. We firmly felt the power of your perseverance during every second of that burn. Humanity has once again shown what we are capable of, and it's your hopes for the future that carry us now on this journey around the moon.
Well, Dara Patel joins me now, space expert at the National Space Center. Dara, very good morning. What is the actual aim of this mission? What do we expect to learn from the from what they're doing?
Thank you, Ian. So the Artemis 2 mission, specifically within the Artemis program, is making sure that the Orion capsule, which the crew are currently sitting in, is actually human-rated, able to take humans on future missions to the moon. So they'll be testing things like the life support systems, the communication systems on board. This is the first time that we've had crew on board this Artemis kind of mission, or the Orion spacecraft. And hopefully that will pave the way for future missions where we'll actually be able to see humans land down on the moon.
Now, one of the challenges apparently has been the toilet facilities. According to the front page of The Sun, I've got it in front of me, Houston, WEE have a problem. Astronaut 6-hour bust lav hell. Apparently they wanted to go boldly but couldn't.
Yeah, sometimes I think we sensationalise the headlines there.
Surely,
but yes,
not.
shortly after launch, there was a fault light that occurred with the toilet on board. And I should say this is the first time that we've ever had a toilet on a spacecraft that's heading towards the moon. But thankfully, it was an issue with the fan. We need the fans operating in order to help collect the urine. So they were allowed to go for their number twos, but unfortunately for a short amount of time, they weren't able to we as such. But with ground control and with one of the astronauts on board, Christina Cook, they managed to rectify the situation and the toilet is currently working.
Thank goodness for that. You wouldn't want to spend 10 days in a capsule like that without proper facilities, would you? Now, are we going to get pictures back? Because I think they will be pictures the like of which we've probably never seen before. That's what I'm really looking forward to. When are we likely to see those?
Yeah, so we saw very early this morning the translunar injection burn, which means that astronauts are now heading in that Orion spacecraft towards the moon. And on their four-day journey there, they will be conducting a little bit of science, but also a brilliant opportunity to test out some of those digital technologies, including the cameras they'll have on board. And one of the things that they're using with this mission is laser communication, which means that you'll have higher 4K resolution images. So I hope in the coming days we'll be able to see some of those images as the astronauts travel away from the Earth and head towards the moon. And of course, as they get around the moon and travel towards the Earth again on their return journey, I'm sure we'll see many more.
Just finally, how do they get back?
So this is what we call a free lunar trajectory path. And that means essentially they're using the gravity of the moon to slingshot themselves back around. So these astronauts are not going into orbit around the Earth. They're essentially making a figure eight shape around the Earth and the moon. And by planning that trajectory at the correct angles, once they swing round the moon's gravity, a little bit like hanging onto a merry-go-round, will just propel them all the way back towards the Earth. So it's a lower risk mission in the sense that they're not orbiting. They're just swinging around the far side of the moon and heading back.
And it always used to be that astronauts would land in an ocean somewhere. I mean, is there a sort of craft that they'll land in a desert, or will they be parachuted back into the ocean somewhere?
So they are continuing with their splash landing, as NASA have done for many years now. So sitting in their Orion spacecraft, they'll jettison what we call the European service module. So the power system sitting on the back, and it will just be the astronauts in their crew cabin. This will come down towards the Earth, and they're hoping for a splashdown in the Pacific, just off the coast of San Francisco in now about 8 days' time.
Dara, it's fascinating, isn't it? Thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Dara Patel there, space expert at the National Space Center. Believe it or not, it's the 1500th day of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. This war has lasted longer than the First World War. We'll be talking to a member of the Ukrainian Parliament in just a few moments' time. And we'll take more of your calls on the U-turn by the government and indeed the SNP government in Scotland on oil and gas exploration. 0345 6060 973. It's 8:32 news headlines on LBC with Dominic Ellis.
Senior executives at Marks and Spencer urging the government to do more to tackle high street crime. Bosses are warning that shoplifting and attacks on staff are becoming more aggressive and brazen. President Trump has warned the United States will step up its attacks on Iran's infrastructure if leaders don't agree on his terms to end the war. The US and Israel have carried out further strikes, with a key bridge in Tehran among the targets. And the Orion capsule carrying the astronauts aboard the Artemis 2 mission is now officially on its way to the moon. Speaking on a video call, the NASA crew members appeared in good spirits, saying they already had incredible views of Earth. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, sunny spells and showers in the north and in the east, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC.
A little something for spring is coming your way from Tesco Mobile. A £20 gift card, it's yours with selected club card price offers, like our 60GB SIM for just £13 a month, saving you £48. So switch today to enjoy a little extra this spring. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. End 17th of May. Club card, 4G phone and 24-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR on an all-electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term.
OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
Shall I? 8:35. I was just consulting Freddie, my producer, saying, shall I read out this text from Karen or not? Because she's highlighted something that Dara Patel said there about number twos and number ones. So if you're eating your breakfast, I apologise in advance for reading this text out, but it is quite apposite. Karen says, how can you do a number two without doing a we at the same time? That shows incredible control. No, I'm not going to read the last line of that. No, that would be too much, wouldn't it? Right, let's go to your calls on energy. Awkward gear change. Scott is in West Hampstead. Scott, do you welcome these apparent U-turns?
Hi, Ian, and a happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you.
Absolutely, I welcome them. And I quite often listen to Angela Knight when she speaks on LBC, and I think she was on your Cross Question, wasn't she?
She was, yes.
The last few days or last week or two, and I would like to see her come back into government, into Parliament, and perhaps be made a baroness, because she speaks absolutely, you know, total common sense about, you know, not only the generation of revenue from North Sea oil and gas, but also, you know, energy security, given the current circumstances in the world and the war in the Middle East. What's not to like about the government doing a U-turn? And I'm not quite sure whether Ed Miliband is part of that U-turn or whether Sir Keir lent on him, but I would bring Angela into government. I every time I listen to her, I think, wow, she talks such great common sense. And, you know, I come from a part of the country, part of Scotland, where the oil, you know, North Sea gas was a big thing. Just south of Aberdeen, I come from a place called Montrose, where they had oil rigs and so on. And I have my niece's husband works as a consultant for the government in the area of carbon capture. And, you know, jobs are at stake up there. Well, you mentioned the taxi driver. Was it the taxi driver who spoke to you? about the worry up in Aberdeen. And so what's not to like about the U-turn? I think it's absolutely great.
Thank you very much indeed, Scott. We are going to come to Chris in Snitterfield. Never heard of Snitterfield. We'll find out where that is. Oh, it's in Warwickshire in a few moments' time. But first, I want to talk to Kira Ruddick, deputy in the Ukrainian Parliament, who's leader of the Holos Party. Why do I want to talk to her? Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to Kira. But today is apparently the 1500th day of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And I think Ukraine has just gone out of the headlines over the past few weeks. I suppose you could say for obvious reasons, given the war in Iran. But it's really important that we don't forget what's happening in Ukraine. So, Kira, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us again on LBC. We really appreciate it. 1,500 days, I mean, that is an incredible length of time. It's longer than the First World War lasted. Is there an end in sight?
Good morning, Ian, and thank you so much for having me, and thank you for remembering Ukraine and our fight. It is crucially important for us and for all Ukrainians who supposedly will be listening to that. So, no, there is no end of the war in sight. This is my feeling here on the ground. We see that the diplomatic, the peace efforts that were started by President Trump that we were very skeptical about, right now they are nowhere closer to an end or to any sort of result. We see Russia having no intention to stop, and with the gas and oil prices having this additional cash influx that they desperately needed to continue paying for the war. And we see that right now the competition for the weapons and supplies for the air defense systems is absolutely crazy. And we cannot assure our people that in the nearest future, Ukraine will have the air defense ammunition to take down those ballistic missiles that are coming our way. But we are still here. We are still fighting. We have no intention of giving up. We are not alone. And we still have the support of our neighbors. We have the support of democratic countries like the United Kingdom and many others. And we know that against all odds, we are not going to capitulate. That's that.
And is there a bit of a stalemate in the fighting? Because we used to get reports from the Donbass area where Russia would make a few advances, then Ukraine would take the land back, but everything seemed to be relatively static. What have been the developments, particularly in that area, in the last few weeks?
So there are things happening at the battlefield, back and forth, but it's not that we are ready to announce something just yet, and I will leave it to the military. The issue that we are still facing is that while Russia is unable to have significant gains at the battlefield, they intensify the attacks of the peaceful cities and terrorizing us in preparation for the next winter. The previous winter was the hardest in the beginning of the full-scale invasion with the extremely low temperatures and our energy system being almost destroyed. So whatever we have rebuilt, Russia is trying to destroy right now. So we would not be looking to the end of the year and the new heating season.
What about the infrastructure in Ukraine? Is Russia still attacking sort of energy plants and bridges and railways? Is that still going on?
Every single day and night, Ian, it is going on. So there are so many people around me who say that they will not go on train anymore because they had survived this absolutely devastating situation when you are somewhere in the field. The drone is coming after the train and people are let out into the field and have to wait so they will not die in the train. And this is just terrifying. And again, the whole world is watching, and the only thing that we can do is again strengthen out our air defense systems and ability to take down the drones that are coming our way.
How do Ukrainians mark Easter?
We'll celebrate Easter in a week and a half, and we hope that there will be prisoners exchange. But again, the Easter is always one of my favorite holidays because it, again, the confirmation that that life wins over darkness and life wins over death. That's one of the things to always remember every day when you're upset, when it seems that there is no future in sight, to believe in God and to celebrate Easter, one of those holidays about victory and resurrection against all odds.
Well, it's a brilliant way of putting it, Kira. And thank you once again for joining us here on LBC. That's Kira Rudik, a deputy in the Ukrainian Parliament, leader of the Holos Party. Right, I promised you Chris in Snitterfield, and we're going to deliver on that promise now. Chris, very good. I nearly said evening, but I didn't quite get
it
out, did I? Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. What would you like to say?
Listening all these weeks to people advocating renewables, nobody's ever mentioned how many properties in the UK have combi boilers. We were all sold combi boilers many years ago when we discovered North Sea gas, and people ripped out their water tanks and replaced them with combi boilers and put showers into their homes.
So what is a combi boiler? I'm very ignorant on these things.
Well, it's the way you heat your water. It's a gas boiler. You don't need to have a hot water tank. It just heats the water directly to your tap and to your bath and your shower.
Right. Okay.
So the cost there is people... I mean, for example, there are cottages in this village where they've ripped out the water tank many years ago, enlarged the bathroom, which has enlarged the bathroom, and they put their showers in. Now, if they've got to go to renewables, they've got to put tanks back in, so they lose all the space again. And it must be the cost. They're probably the highest percentage of homes in this country have that sort of heating. So nobody mentions the cost to the consumer there and the work involved.
Well, of course, we're all being urged to get heat pumps now, aren't we?
Yes, but you still need a water tank.
Yeah.
With a heat pump. So you have to replace your water. You have to put a water tank into your house.
So the answer is basically not to trust the authorities when they say, right, this is the thing that everybody needs to do. I mean, do you remember back in, what was it, about 2005, when Gordon Brown was telling us all that diesel was the way forward and the most environmentally friendly way of putting fuel into our cars? And then it was biofuels. And both of those things have now been sort of very much put on the back burner.
Absolutely. And then we have the other problem. What percentage of the population drive cars that are 5 years or more older, which are all diesel or petrol? I mean, people aren't... We've got a cost of living crisis. People can't turn around and sell these old cars because there's no market for them, so they have to be scrapped, and then you're replaced with electric, and people don't have the money to pay for electric cars.
Chris, thank you very much indeed. Elliot in Birmingham says, Ian, how do you not know what a combi boiler is? Well, I'm not an expert on boilers. My partner does all that sort of thing. We did actually have a new boiler a couple of years ago. I think it was a gas boiler, but I couldn't swear to it. I do this sort of thing. He does that sort of thing. That's just the way we rock. It's 8:45. Let's get the news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Senior executives at Marks & Spencer are urging the government to do more to tackle high street crime, warning that shoplifting is becoming more brazen. President Trump's warned the US will step up its attacks on Iran's infrastructure if leaders don't agree to his terms to end the war. And the Energy Secretary is reportedly considering plans to approve the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. LBC weather. Windy with scattered showers for many areas, sunny spells and showers in the north, and in the east, a high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound to Junction 11 at Dunstable South. The motorway stays closed down to Junction 10 at Luton Airport. The A41's very busy southbound down to Cricklewood Lane, and that's because a lorry's broken down and only one lane is open. On the trains of Anti-West Coast and London Northwestern are running between Milton Keynes and Euston because of the engineering works. Also on the trains, DLR services are running between Poplar and Lewisham, but that's because of an ongoing investigation. C2C trains aren't going to and from Fenchurch Street today, also for engineering works, so trains are going to and from Liverpool Street instead, and there's a reduced service on the Gatwick Express.
LBC.
At EDF,
We don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato.
Whoa!
And spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to 100,000 euros per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app, the XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
8:49, Stephen Matlock. He's being a cheeky boy this morning. He says, Ian, I find it hard to believe you've ever rocked. I'll have you know, I've been to 3 Meatloaf concerts. I mean, if that doesn't prove that I can rock with the best of them, I don't know what does. Now, we are going to talk about the meaning of Good Friday in a moment, because we had a text, which I'll read out in a couple of minutes' time, at 8:10 from Cal in Ealing. And I thought, actually, you know, do people actually understand what Good Friday actually is? So we're going to find out in just a moment. But first, let's go to Andrew, who's a new caller in Halifax, who wants to talk about energy supply. Andrew, very good morning.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Very good. I was out walking the dogs this morning listening to people calling in about energy and the big deployment things that people want to do around energy. So nuclear, wind farms, all that kind of stuff. What none of that addresses is the elephant in the room. That is, our national grid is just not at a point where it can support those kinds of large-scale projects. The answer is actually directly over our heads, and it's solar. Rooftop solar in this country could be revolutionary for us, but we just don't seem to be taking that opportunity for some reason.
I'll tell you one reason, in that I wanted to put solar panels on our house roof, and I talked to Octopus Energy about it, because that's who we're with. So I sort of looked on their website, filled in all the forms, they phoned me back, gave me a quote, and I thought, well, what's not to like? But the problem is that our roof doesn't face in necessarily the right direction. So they wanted to put it all on the front of the house rather than at the side and the back. And my partner decided to veto this. So me thinking I'm being very environmentally friendly, all my plans have gone to smoke.
So I think domestically it can be challenging. But if we think commercially, if you think as you're driving along the motorway, looking at all those huge factories and warehouses at the side of the road, they've all got huge flat roofs where orientation is much less of an issue. We should be incentivising companies and landlords that own those buildings to put solar on them.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But why do you think it hasn't taken off? Is it because there haven't been financial incentives?
I think there's partly financial incentives, partly, if you probably remember, back in the day we had the feed-in tariff. As a result of that, the solar industry got quite a bad name, and the withdrawal of that feed-in tariff meant people just stepped away from solar and just didn't think it worked anymore. Typically, you'll get payback still within 5 years. The great thing is there are funds out there now that will actually pay for solar to be installed on your roof and just charge you a cheaper rate per kilowatt hour. So if you're paying 24 pence a kilowatt hour for electricity from the grid today, you could engage with a funder, get solar on your roof at quite a large scale, and be paying 8 to 12 pence a kilowatt hour with no capital cost and no risk.
And if you install a battery at the same time, you can actually sell it back to the national grid.
And the big plus there is we've not got to spend this huge amount of money on the national grid that we'd have to for these large nuclear projects that I'm fully behind, but we just frankly can't afford to do them.
So why is it the national grid has got into a state of disrepair? Because this was surely eminently predictable.
Absolutely. Just continuous lack of investment, lack of available cash. The costs are eye-watering. We looked at a project in Liverpool to just get enough power locally to that building for a project we were looking at. It was £1 million. It's just eye-watering amounts of cash.
And when electricity was privatised back, what was it, 89-90, one of the main reasons was the government did it was because they said, well, look, we can't provide all the investment that this industry is going to need, so effectively it's going to be the responsibility of the private sector now. Now, there has been a lot of private sector investment, but has that plan really failed? I mean, is this a failure of privatisation?
I think any scenario where you've got public interest and private interest are dynamically opposed, who do you serve, the public or the shareholders?
Well, it with the utilities, it ought to be both, and that's, I suppose, the responsibility of regulation.
I agree. I think challenging that, undoing that, is a huge project that I think is going to run over decades. If we had the appetite to do it. In the short term, the immediate solution to the supply of energy locally is rooftop solar. And in a scenario where you can do it with no capital outlay, I just can't understand why people aren't doing it large scale.
Darren on a text here says, I installed solar on my tenant's property, best thing I've ever done.
Yep.
One or two other people saying similar things, so maybe solar is the way forward. But what I couldn't quite work out is, if you put solar on the front of your house, so like everybody can see it, and you want to sell your house, is that going to increase the value or decrease the value of your house?
I think with energy prices continuing to rise as they do, it can only have a positive impact, can't it?
I would have thought so, but you need to convince my partner of that, because I have failed in my task. But anyway, thank you very much indeed, Andrew. Now, I promised you this text from Cal, who says, please can you stop saying Happy Good Friday, as it's one of the most solemn, saddest days in the Christian calendar, the day Christ was crucified and died on the cross. Easter Sunday is the day of celebration when Christ rose from the dead. It may be offensive to Christians listening this morning. I'm slightly upset to keep hearing this, and from now on, and now from one of your guests. I hope you don't mind me saying, no, I don't mind you saying at all, Cal, but as a result of that, I mean, just to show that on the breakfast show, our producers are very fleet of foot. That text was sent in at 12 minutes past eight, and we now have the Reverend Sally Hitchener on the line, Rector of North Lambeth, to explain to us the exact meaning of Good Friday. I mean, Cal, I think, has done actually quite a good job there, but Sally, welcome. Long time no speak. We used to speak all the time.
Well, Ian, nice to hear from you. Lovely to hear from Carol as well.
Right.
Always good to hear someone passionate about their faith.
Now, just tell us about Good Friday. What are the things that we need to know about why we mark Good Friday?
So Good Friday is the day that Christians remember Jesus dying. From 12 till 3 o'clock today, we remember Jesus on the cross. Those are the hours that he was on the cross. And so if you're passing churches or you have friends who are Christians, probably not a good idea to phone them during that time. It's the day when we remember Jesus going through a really horrific experience of injustice and being stripped of all of his friends, all of his clothes, all of everything else, and being held up on a cross. Christians have different interpretations of what that means. Some Christians believe it's that Jesus paid the penalty for our sin. Some Christians believe it's Jesus overcoming evil. Some Christians believe it's him being in solidarity with our world, in our poverty and our suffering, and not giving up on us even at the point of death. So there's different interpretations. And then, of course, we lead through to Holy Saturday, where Jesus was taken down from the cross, put in the grave. and then on to Easter Sunday, where Christians believe Jesus rose from the dead.
And if he rose from the dead, I mean, what happened to him after that? That's what I've never quite understood.
Well, we do know that. So he went back to visit some of his friends. There's lovely stories of him connecting with his friends again, having meals together, surprising them when they're out fishing and with a barbecue on the beach. There's just lovely little moments in those stories of just human connection there after the resurrection. And then he tells them that he's going to send the Holy Spirit to be with all of them. So the problem of Jesus being here is he was only one man, so could only be in one place at one time. But he promises the Holy Spirit will go and be with each individual person. So and then he goes back to the Father being lifted up on as we celebrate Ascension in a few weeks' time.
So, because that's the bit that I've never quite understood, sort of, so he comes back, he does all of these things that you've just said,
yes.
And then you think, well, does he lead, like, a normal life, and then die at the age of 70 or whatever, but just describe more about Ascension.
No, so, well, it's a few weeks after after Jesus comes back. He appears a number of times, I think it's three times, to different disciples in different circumstances. Three or four times, and he appears and then goes away again. One time they're in a locked room, and he appears in the room with them, so his resurrected body isn't held back by things like walls and physical material things. But they do notice that his resurrected body isn't perfect. It's got holes in his hands still, and where the nails were, and in his side. And one of the disciples, Thomas, doesn't quite believe that it's possible. He says, "Oh, I won't believe until I can put my finger in the hole in his side."
Mm.
And Jesus comes back and says, "Come on, Thomas, have a go." And at that moment, Thomas believes. So I think there's doubters included in this story. There's room for people who are sort of questioning whether or not this is a real thing or not in the story itself.
Has there ever been a sort of Hollywood film made about the whole Easter process?
Yeah, there's been a few. Mel Gibson did one a while ago. You might have seen it, The Passion of the Christ.
Oh, yeah.
That literally is a Hollywood film. But there's been there's a TV series now out called The Chosen, which is all of the stories of Jesus' life. And you can watch that for free on their app. You can also just go to churches like my one. And we've got a children's service. I can do a quick plug at 10 o'clock today at St. Anselm's Kennington, and for adults today from 2 till 3 Good Friday.
We better let you get off there. Thank you very much indeed. That is the Reverend Sally Kitchener, Rector of North Lambeth. Coming up in the next hour, the a big executive from M&S has attacked what he's called lawless Britain. And I want to spend some of the next hour asking, how safe do you feel in London? Because London has been hauled over the coals for being a very unsafe city. A lot of social media seems to think that London is the unsafest city in the world. Donald Trump has fed into that narrative with his attacks on Sadiq Khan. Also, FIFA has raised World Cup final ticket prices to a massive £8,250. And Reform UK has pledged to cut welfare to keep the pensions triple lock. All that coming up here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, executives at Marks & Spencer are urging the government to do more to tackle high street crime. Bosses have warned that shoplifting and attacks on staff are becoming more aggressive and brazen. Earlier this week, an M&S store in southwest London was among shops targeted in disorder involving a large group of teenagers. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has given her reaction to LBC.
This is yet another reason why I think we need to ban social media for under 16s. Social media is for adults. It is not for children. These are the sorts of things that we will continue to see happening if we don't get our kids off social media. There's only so much parents can do. I do think that parents should be able to do more so that their children do not feel that they can carry out these sorts of activities and not face sanctions at home either.
A government consultation looking into a potential social media ban for under 16s is underway. The Home Office says it's giving police stronger powers to tackle shoplifting.
Donald Trump has warned the United States will step up its attacks on Iran's infrastructure if leaders don't agree to his terms to end the war. The United States and Israel have carried out further strikes with a key bridge in Tehran among the targets. 100 legal experts in America have also signed an open letter expressing concern over potential breaches on international law during the conflict in the Middle East. The Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, is reportedly set to approve the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. Ministers are under pressure to increase drilling due to concerns over energy security because of the Iran war. The Labour government has previously banned new licences for new oil and gas fields in the North Sea. But the former CEO of Energy UK, Angela Knight, told Ian Dale on LBC this morning, such a move makes sense.
It's got to be there as part of the mix of our energy consumption in the UK. And it makes much more sense to get what we can locally. People are concerned about carbon footprints, and that's right. Logic also would dictate that the carbon footprint of something that you're extracting locally is actually going to be less in total than something that you've got to transport halfway around the world.
A government spokesman says no decision on either project has been made. Thousands of Eastern rail journeys will be disrupted by a partial closure of the West Coast Main Line. The six-day shutdown from today will impact services between London Euston and Milton Keynes. The closure is part of a £400 million upgrade. And NASA's Artemis II mission has left Earth's orbit and is now heading for the moon. The four astronauts fired their spacecraft's engine for the next stage of the journey overnight. They've described the views as spectacular. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas through Good Friday. Some sunny spells and showers for the north and in the east. A high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Subway knows you're on the hunt for the perfect shawarma chicken. Well, people, you're in luck. How about one on freshly baked bread or even a wrap? Then there's the juicy, tender shawarma chicken pieces marinated in a traditional blend of rich, aromatic spices, topped with your fave fresh salad and drenched in a garlicky, tangy, yogurty sauce. The new shawarma spice chicken, now at Subway.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 4 minutes past nine on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until ten. Now, last night on my evening show, if you were listening, we spent the last hour talking about these so-called link-up meetings in Clapham. Excuse me. And they've been happening in other places around the country where groups of teenagers arrange to meet up via WhatsApp or other social media. And these are generally 14 to 16-year-olds. And it's sort of a mass swarm in a way, and they sort of take over high streets and sort of occupy shops for an amount of time. There doesn't seem to be a lot of violence involved. They don't seem to be sort of nicking a load of stuff from the shops. But the shopkeepers are very exercised about this, and there are worries that this could be repeated over the Easter weekend. Now, in Rochdale, where this happened earlier this week, the police authority imposed a 48-hour ban on sort of mass gatherings. Now, I don't know whether that's going to be rolled out, but a lot of the retail sector is thinking, well, this is the last thing we need. We're up against it anyway, and to lose half a day or a day's takings because we cannot open our doors for fear of being invaded. I mean, that is something the police ought to get to grips with. Now, Marks and Spencer have hit out at Sadiq Khan for failing to get a grip on crime, warning that lawlessness is putting the public at risk. They urged the Mayor of London to prioritise effective policing as more, this is their words, more brazen, more organised and more aggressive attacks ramp up across Britain's high streets every day. This is quite something from M&S. You think of M&S as sort of slightly reserved company, not given to making controversial public statements, but that's what they've done. Thinus Keeve, their retail director, said staff had been headbutted and taken to hospital following an ammonia attack in the last week, as he urged Labour to do more to tackle shoplifting and crime. I'm not sure whether we can necessarily blame the Mayor of London for this. He gets blamed for a lot of things, but is it over the top to blame him personally for this? I think the way these things are policed, I mean, that cannot come under criticism. But more widely, why is it that London is now getting a reputation, mainly through people on sort of very right-wing websites and people like President Trump, saying that it is a lawless city. Well, I don't live in London, but I come to London every day. I'm staying in London all over Easter because I'm doing this programme all over Easter. And when I walk around the streets of London, when I finish my radio show, for instance, at 10 o'clock, do I feel unsafe? No, I don't. Now, you might say, yeah, you're 6 foot two. You're actually just under 17 stone now. That's another story. People aren't going to take you on. If you are female and walking around the streets of London, you might think rather differently. Well, I've tested this out on quite a lot of women over the past couple of weeks and said, do you now feel unsafe walking the streets of London? And I probably asked about 20 women this, and only one said they did. Now, I would say that in any big city, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in the United States, whether it's in Germany, France, Spain or Italy, if you're in a big city, you're probably going to feel a little bit less safe than you might do if you're walking around a village. I think that goes with the territory. There will always be crime. There will always be violent crime. But if you look at violent crime in London, the statistics show that it's on the decline. Our murder rate is the lowest that it's been for several decades. Knife crime, although it had gone up, is actually coming down now. Now, you may remember, as avid fans of Nick Ferrari, you may remember these bizarre comments from the former Chancellor of the Exchequer, now member of Reform UK, Nadeem Zahawi, when he was speaking to Nick back in February on rising lawlessness in London.
Do you feel safe in London?
No. I've got to tell you.
And for your children?
Yesterday, I walked from my home in one of the most, upmarket, you can call it, areas of London, and an individual walked past me. I literally walked off the pavement into the middle of the road, kept a very close eye at 8 a.m. right?
To what see was, whether... What was this individual? Did he appear to be drunk? Did he appear to be aggressive?
He just looked at, he hadn't slept for, a week and just looked like somebody that might be violent. I don't know. But I just walked and, away from the pavement to walk, and I'm a big guy.
Right? Yes, you are.
And I don't feel safe that my 13-year-old can walk in London. That can't be right.
But I'm sorry, if you're frightened of somebody who looks as if they haven't slept for a week, that's just utterly bizarre. And it seems to me there is an agenda among some people to do down our capital city. I mean, if we had Jerusalem, I'd get Mikey to play it now. But I think London is one of the great world cities. We should not be doing it down. Yes, of course London has its problems. Of course there are areas that are slightly less salubrious than others. But tell me a capital city in the world where that is not the case. We should be celebrating London. It is one of the world's greatest cities. Whether you're talking about entertainment, whether you're talking about cuisine, whether you're talking about football, obviously better in the east than the north. Well, some parts of North London anyway, but let's not go there. It is one of the people come to London because they see it as the preeminent city in Europe. I mean, Paris will try and lay claim to that, but anybody that's been to Paris lately, I mean, Paris is a city with huge problems, but let's not get into a competition. So why are people doing down London? But also, what can be done to make sure these link-up meetings do not proliferate and they don't become a real phenomenon? Is it to do with parental control? Ava Vidal, who was on Cross Question last night, she said, well, a lot of these kids need some good old-fashioned Caribbean parenting. And then I asked her to explain what that meant. And it was actually quite sort of disciplinarian. And we had a couple of, we had a great call, possibly the best call I've had on my programme the whole year, from Sandra in Cheshunt at the end of the programme last night. And she explained how she brought up her son. He then came on the radio. And we might play you a little bit of those calls a little bit later in this hour. Well, let's talk to Donna Jones, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner, who joins us now. Donna, very good morning to you. These comments from Marks and Spencer, I mean, they are quite hard hitting from a company like that. I mean, you're obviously not in London, but how do you view London from the outside and the problems that it has?
Well, good morning, Ian. Yes, it's quite extraordinary, actually, having a supermarket coming out speaking quite so strongly on calling on direct action from, as you say, both Shabana Mahmood, the Home Secretary, and also from, you know, Sir Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London. How do I view London? Look, I mean, I love London. I am a massive London fan. It is an amazing city. Of course, my favourite city in the world. But it is a capital city, as you've quite rightly just identified. I was in Barcelona this time last year. One of my friends had her phone stolen from her hand. I've seen that happen when I've been in Westminster. Happens to lots of people. And I think probably one of the biggest issues in London at the moment is actually this, in terms of tourism and people visiting our capital city, is in fact the phone gang thieves, you know, the organised crime gangs that are doing that. Now, that's probably largely, we think, linked to the levels of people in the country that are here illegally, who've got no recourse to public funds and or work, can't work, and therefore they're having to resort to this. Some of them will be here legally and they will just be criminals, and that's a choice that they've made, taken to try and earn money. But actually, that black market of buying secondhand phones, exporting them wherever they go in the world, this is a big issue. The Met are dealing with it. They're very aware of it. But what's happened over the last week, or the last 72 hours, I should say, actually, with these kids in Clapham High Street, it's reminiscent of what happened in Oxford Street, isn't it, back in August 23. And I remember coming on LBC at that point and talking to you guys about this. This is a really worrying concern. There's three questions for me. Number one, who are these kids? And I think through live facial recognition, the Met and police forces across the country should be able to get on top of this. Secondly, what are the parents doing about it? I said that on LBC 2.5 years ago. And three, what are the consequences? And there lies the problem. There are very, very few consequences for these 14, 15 and 16-year-olds that are running in one in groups of 1-200 young people. People on that high street the other day said they thought there was a terrorist attack happening. You know, staff being headbutted in supermarkets, people having to close their shops and put their shutters down at sort of, you know, whatever time it was of the day. It's completely, completely unacceptable. It is not where we should be as a country. We've got to unpick why young people, whether it be because of TikTok or whatever, but something is triggering them to make them think this is acceptable. In my Hampshire, in my area in Hampshire, we've got three dispersal orders that councils have put in place over this weekend, Easter weekend, because the kids are off school for an extra 2 days, Friday and Monday, and councils have proactively put dispersal orders in place because they know there'll be large gathering of kids. It's just got not acceptable. What is going on?
Donna, thank you very much indeed. That's Donna Jones, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police and Crime Commissioner. Jo Dromey joins me now, General Secretary of the Fabian Society, which is described here as a British socialist organisation. I should declare an interest here because my great aunt was one of the 9 founding members of the Fabian Society. Jo Dromey, you didn't know that, did you?
I didn't, but what a lovely story. And thanks to your great aunt for setting up the Fabian Society.
Happy to provide you with employment, Jo. Now, why do you think there seems to be a political agenda against London?
Well, I think first I'd start by echoing what you said, because I think it's important to state the fact that crime in London, it has been falling and is at, you know, pretty historic lows, and also violent crime.
Serious crime. I mean, so-called petty crime, I think, is on. I mean, shoplifting is at record levels, for example. So not all crimes have come down.
Yes. But overall crime has been falling, and particularly violent crime has been falling. So violent crime over the last year has fallen in every single London borough. Knife crime has been falling. The kind of thing which had been causing most concern in London a decade ago, the tragic murders of teenagers, down 3/4 since the start of the decade. You mentioned retail crime. I think there is a distinct challenge across the country with retail crime. It's something Usdaw, the shop workers union, has been highlighting for a number of years. And it does look like there's been a shift from kind of spontaneous and individual kind of petty theft from shops to kind of more organized shoplifting. And that is something that the government has been looking to tackle. I think there's also new crimes like the one that you've been mentioning, the kind of swarming crimes, which are being driven by social media. And those are concerning. They absolutely do need to be addressed. But with kind of high profile things like this, we must not lose the overall story. And we must recognise that crime in London has been falling and violent crime has been falling. And so we do need to ask ourselves, why are people raising concerns in this way? And why is this being driven by a group of politicians on the right about a narrative of lawless London? My view is it's very, very clear that this is a political agenda, and it's very clear that there's some quite dark forces driving this.
Well, let's put cards on the table. Is it all about Sadiq Khan?
I don't think it's just about Sadiq Khan, but I think that there is a big part of that. So I think it's difficult to escape the conclusion that racism and Islamophobia have a big, big part to play in this narrative. So London, it's the city I've always lived in, is the most diverse part in the UK, and our city's headed by a mayor who is both a Muslim and a person of colour. And Trump is utterly obsessed by Sadiq Khan. He describes London as a crime-ridden hellhole and is constantly abusive of Sadiq Khan. You would have thought he's got bigger things to be dealing with than kind of throwing around insults about a mayor the other side of the world. And it is bizarre because London is safer than every single city in the United States, yet he kind of reserves a distinct vitriol for Sadiq Khan. And unfortunately, as with many of these kind of like far right talking points that we have, they kind of spread both on social media and they spread across populist right parties internationally as well. And you've increasingly seen Reform and the Conservatives picking up these talking points and attacking London as being unsafe, divided, and a kind of hotbed of Islamism. And it is utterly untrue. It utterly does not represent the London.
In a way, in the past, groupings, political parties, whatever you want to call them, on the right have always taken the view sort of, well, my country right or wrong. They've always been patriotic. And if somebody else talks down their country or their city, they would react really badly to that. That seems to have completely gone out of the window now. And because we have a Muslim mayor, that seems to be the excuse for slagging off the whole of the city of London and making out that it's some sort of lawless hellhole. And I don't think that is people's day-to-day experience. Obviously, there will be people who've experienced crime in London, and I completely accept that. But overall, it's a brilliant place to live.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't want to put it all down to prejudice. I think there's some other factors that are driving this kind of frankly quite fractious and difficult relationship between the capital and much of the country. So the kind of very high levels of regional inequality that we have, you know, London, there is obviously high levels of poverty in London, but overall, London, it has far higher levels of wealth and income than the rest of the country. And I think understandably, you know, we saw this with the kind of Boris Johnson's levelling up narrative. It played into a strong sense of a kind of divide in the prospects between London and the rest of the country. So I think part of the antipathy towards the capital is a feeling that the streets are paved with gold in London and the rest of the country isn't getting the same support and opportunity. And that does need to be addressed. But a big part of it, particularly around crime and safety, is being driven by populist right narratives. And it is feeding on and indeed inspiring racism and Islamophobia. And this just does not represent London, because London is the most diverse part of the UK, but it has a strong and cohesive and vibrant society, and it is a safe city. Okay. It's a fantastic place to live, and we should be proud of our capital, and we should stand up to these people who are seeking to divide us by spreading nonsense.
Well, I'm about to stand up and sing Land of Hope and Glory now after that, Joe. Thank you very much indeed. That's Joe Dromey, General Secretary of the Fabian Society. Angus says, Ian, you said only one woman said they felt unsafe. Did you use the plural pronoun because you were actually uncertain if the one who felt unsafe was a female? No, I didn't. I don't go with all of this pronoun rubbish. I can assure you of that, says Angus, who tells me he's also 6'2", but way over 17 stone. It's 21 minutes past nine. News headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Senior executives at Marks & Spencer are urging the government to do more to tackle high street crime, warning that shoplifting is becoming more brazen. President Trump's warned the US will step up its attacks on Iran's infrastructure if leaders don't agree to his terms to end the war. And the energy secretary is reportedly considering
considering plans to approve the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. LBC weather. Windy with scattered showers for many areas. Sunny spells and showers in the north and in the east. A high of 10 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Two lanes are closed on the M1 southbound at Junction 11 at Dunstable South. It's following an accident and there are severe delays on the approach. One lane's closed on the M25 anti-clockwise just after Junction 27 at the M11, and that's because a van has broken down. Very busy in Petswood. Crofton Lane's had to be closed both ways after an accident. And also in Worcester Park, Langley Avenue remains closed eastbound for the emergency works. Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern are running between Milton Keynes and Euston throughout this Easter period because of the engineering works. Also for engineering works, no C2C trains going to and from Fenchurch Street. Services are going to and from Liverpool Street instead.
This is LBC.
Did you know that Tesco does home insurance? And you can get club card prices on the house. What? You didn't know? Shut the front door. Over 500,000 people already have Tesco home insurance. And it was awarded which recommended provider for home insurance in September 2025. See how much you can save with your club card. Search online for Tesco Home Insurance. Every little helps.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve the perfect one instantly. Get £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
This is LBC with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973.
25 minutes past 9. Darren says, you just had a 5-minute prolonged chat supporting the left wing. No, I've had a 5-minute long chat supporting the reputation of our capital city. Thank you very much. Ashish is in Croydon. Hello, Ashish.
Hi. I think people, when they downplay London and criticise it, they're not saying actually what they want to say. They're saying crime in London is, you know, very bad. And, you know, obviously Sadiq Khan, they criticise him. What they're trying to say behind the scenes is these high ethnic minority towns and cities are rife with crime. That's what they're trying to say. And what they're trying to say is London is rife with crime because it has a high proportion of ethnic minorities. But they're afraid to say that openly. So they'll say, oh, London, you know, it's out, you know, it's spiraling out of control. I think part of the reason for that is because when, I mean, 80% of this country or so, am I correct, Ian, is white? Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's 87% is white.
Is white, okay.
Yeah.
That's a big majority. But when I see news, crime news reports on the telly, whether it's grooming gangs, county line gangs, teenagers sadly killing each other, these link-up things, why am I disproportionately seeing ethnic minorities? That's the thing. I would have thought 80% of this country is white, okay? But the not only ethnic minorities, but disproportionately the crime, whether it's crime, like I said, grooming gangs, whether it's, you know, county lines gangs, link up, if it's individuals who randomly killed people in the street, like Birmingham, Nottingham, Southport, if it, you know, Beckenham, you had the soldier that attempted murder of a soldier. You had the train in Huntington, guy in the train going around, you know, trying to kill people. Why are these stories featuring disproportionately ethnic minorities, whether it's people who look like me or people from the black community or whatever? Why is that?
Well, I mean, that is for a much longer discussion. I think you make an interesting point. I think it's slightly exaggerated in that I think if somebody, and I've got to be careful, I can't remember whether this is still subject to legal cases, but the guy on the train in Peterborough, I mean, he was from an ethnic minority, and I don't think you should necessarily sort of hide that fact.
But do you understand why 87% of this country is white? When people see on the telly, you know, these crime stories or individuals trying to murder people, terrorism, county line gangs, link up.
Yeah. Okay. No,
it's disproportionate.
You've made the point, but then somebody will come back and say, yes, but this link up thing in Clapham, you can see from the pictures that the overwhelming majority of the kids involved in that were from an ethnic minority background. Now, I don't know whether there's anything to really sort of what point there is to make of that, but you have raised your point, Ashish, very eloquently. Thank you very much indeed. Now, we will come back to some calls on this in a moment, but first let's look at the World Cup finals, because England are going to be there, Scotland are going to be there, sadly Wales and the Northern Ireland aren't be, but if they were, Welsh or Northern Ireland fans might be facing ticket prices of £8,250. Now, would you pay £8,250 to watch, well, let's just pick two countries from random, Cape Verde, I don't know that's how you pronounce it, and Curaçao. I mean, I'm not sure I would, if I'm honest. Kieran Maguire joins us, football finance expert, author of The Price of Football and co-presenter of The Price of Football podcast. Kieran, very good morning. I mean, £8,250, they're having a laugh.
Well, yes, that is a ticket for the final, which FIFA have just released. What they're doing is that they're drip feeding tickets onto the market, trying to create an artificial demand and an artificial scarcity for tickets, because there's lots of people in the United States and elsewhere who see this as an opportunity to buy those tickets for £8,250 and resell them. I went on to one of the secondary sites this morning, and I was offered a ticket for $50,360, and that was before the touting site took its commission. It's a strange embodiment of the American dream, that the belief that's sitting in front of your laptop, drinking a Bud, and trying to get tickets for these competitions, where the vast majority of the people that are applying for them have got no interest in going to the matches, but they feel that they can then pass them on and make a profit, and it does appear to have got a bit out of hand.
But if I wanted to go to, say, one of the first round matches, say England against Ghana, what kind of price would I be paying for that?
There's hardly any tickets left in on the main site. Certainly, FIFA aren't showing any at present. So therefore, you have to go to one of the secondary sites. Now, FIFA have appointed themselves as the official ticket tout of the FIFA 2026 World Cup, where they take a 30% commission, and there you would be talking in excess of £1,000 for a group game to see England. And if you want to follow England all the way through to the final, then I think it'd have to be measured in kidneys rather than pounds. Such would be the cost.
But I think I seem to remember from one of your podcasts, you went to, was it South Africa or was it Germany? I can't remember which World Cup you went to. I mean, how much would you have spent going to that World Cup overall, not just tickets, but for that trip, compared to what you would be facing now in America?
Well, yeah, I was at both. I did Germany. I did South Africa. Both amazing experiences. I had tickets for many, many matches, and they were around about $40 to $50 each. And that was felt to be good value. By the time you added on your flight and accommodation and sort of the day-to-day living costs, it probably cost me, you know, $2,000-$2,500 for 2 to 2.5 weeks. So it was absolutely amazing. FIFA do have seemed to have changed tack. I've got FIFA's finances in front of me. FIFA lost $612 million in 2023 and $820 million in 2024. It looks as if they're now trying to recover as much of that money as possible via the 2026 FIFA Men's World Cup.
We're slightly running out of time, so I was going to ask you about the plight of Spurs, which as a West Ham fan, obviously, I'm very interested in, because we are in a similar situation. But we've run out of time for that. But I thought we would just finish off by indulging in a gratuitous plug for the fact that you and your podcast partner, Kevin Day, are appearing on my Edinburgh Fringe show, Ian Dale All Talk, in August. I mean, how much of a highlight of your year will that be?
Oh, it is the ultimate peak. If Brighton could get into Europe, I'm a big Brighton fan, and that would be secondary by a long, long way in. I'm very excited. My wife's from Edinburgh, so it gives her an opportunity to go home as well. We're very much looking forward to this.
Tickets available for much cheaper than £8,250 from the Edinburgh Fringe website. Kieran Maguire from the Price of Football podcast, which is the one podcast I listen to every single week. Thank you very much indeed. It's 9:33 on LBC. Time for the news headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Marks and Spencer has urged the Home Office and the Mayor of London to do more to tackle high street crime. Bosses are warning that shoplifting and attacks on staff are becoming more aggressive and brazen. President Trump has said there's much more to come after the United States bombed Iran's largest bridge. Iranian state media say 8 people were killed. And the Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, is reportedly considering approving the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. Ministers are under pressure to increase drilling due to concerns about energy security triggered by the Iran war. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, sunny spells and showers in the north and in the east, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
You have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
Automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it. With Intuit QuickBooks.
Amazon offers term-time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term-time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. And for this week only, we're also guaranteeing 5 winners of £20,000 in our bonus draw. Enter by midnight on Sunday to be in the draw. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day. So we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world. We're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise in terms and conditions.
Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
9:36 on LBC. Paul in Bournemouth says, "Hello, Ian. I paid £25 for 10 tickets involving England in 1966, including the final. Them were the days, Paul. Them were the days." Right, let's go to your calls on London. Is it the lawless place that some people seem to think it is? Or do you agree with me that, yes, of course, there are pockets of areas where you might think twice about walking into, but overall London is a comparatively safe city compared to others in the world. Richard is in Regent's Park. Hello, Richard.
Good morning, Ian. Good morning,
Ian. Good morning to you.
First time caller.
You are very welcome.
I found this issue quite interesting. I'm afraid, though, I agree with you on most issues, but not London. True, it has excellent cuisine, theatre, opera and soccer. Like you, Ian, I'm a West Ham fan.
You can come back.
Furthermore, I've never actually felt unsafe in London. But all that said, there is a lot of petty crime. I've had two phones stolen in 2 years. It is far dirtier than other world cities I have visited recently, those being Tokyo, Athens and Buenos Aires. The roads are full of potholes. And some road changes beg a belief, quite frankly. I mean, why pedestrianise streets to turn them into velodromes? Why put in flower beds when there is no one to maintain them so they become unsightly? And so that's really my position on the whole issue.
I'm surprised you say about dirtiness, because I think London is cleaner than it's ever been.
No, I have to disagree. I mean, take, for instance, tomorrow. I am, as a West Ham season ticket holder, I shall be going to the London Stadium.
Best to do it on Sunday, not tomorrow.
Where I work in Holborn. I can assure you that when I get there, I will find rubbish everywhere. The place will look absolutely awful.
Well, look, the capital cities are big places, and there are always areas which are more unsightly than others. There are always, you go through periods where a particular crime becomes more prevalent. Phone theft is obviously one at the moment, shoplifting another. And I'm not trying to minimise the amount of lawlessness that there is in London, but every capital city in the world has experienced the same thing. And I mean, if you go to Berlin, for example, you will find a similar situation. You go to Paris. So you're never going to get a capital city where crime is very, very low. I mean, I'm sure you may well quote me one or two that there are, but I don't think London is any different to most other capital cities.
Well, as I said, I have to disagree. I mean, look, I can't talk about Paris or Berlin. Funnily enough, I'm going to Paris in June, so I could revisit that then. But as I said, now, look, obviously Tokyo has always been very clean. But, you know, but as I said, I'm not going to say Athens and Buenos Aires are perfect cities, but they're better than London, I'm afraid, Ian.
Well, I've never been to either, so I'm not going to argue with you, Richard, but thank you very much indeed for your call. And please do not go to the London Stadium tomorrow, because the match is actually on Sunday, so you might be in for a disappointment tomorrow. Well, you might be in for a disappointment on Sunday as well, I suppose. Now, earlier in the programme, I was joined by the Reforms Treasury spokesperson and MP for Newark, Robert Jenrick, and I asked him why Nigel Farage has had a change of heart on the triple lock. And the Reform UK leader has previously been sceptical about guaranteeing the triple lock, warning the current system is unaffordable on a national level.
Well, I don't think he was against keeping it. He was very conscious of how costly it is and how weak the state of our public finances are right now. You know, we're really in a mess at the moment, and there's every chance that we could have a fiscal crisis in the years ahead if we don't bring down public spending. So if you make a big commitment like this, you've got to think carefully about it, and you've got to be certain that you can fund it, particularly when you're making a promise to pensioners. You want to keep that. And that's why we took our time and had an internal debate about it before coming to the conclusion that we should take it forwards.
Abby Foster is LBC's personal finance expert. Abby, very good morning to you. Do you agree with Robert Jenrick and the other parties that the triple lock should be here to stay?
I actually do think it needs some sort of reform. I think if it was in a sentence, I'd say the bare minimum that needs to happen with a triple lock is something to be means tested. Right now, obviously, the triple lock means that pensions rise by the higher of either inflation, wages, or 2.5%. And it's costing a fortune. It could cost between up to 15.5 billion a year by the end of the next decade. And I think from my point of view, as someone that works with the next generation, so I teach finance in schools, and a lot of the next generation don't believe that it will be there for them and have just lost trust completely in the government protecting them and their income. And all they see is, well, not all, don't get me wrong, I believe the state pension has a place so that there isn't poverty in pension years, but the younger workers constantly are seeing their rights being reduced and unemployment rising for younger people. You know, young employment in the capital, you've been talking about the capital for a little while, is 25%. That is, why are we not talking about that? But yet we're like handing out state pension to pensioners who are probably one of the wealthiest groups on average. So personally, I think it really needs reform to make sure that the younger generation feel like they have something that will benefit them once they get there. Most of Gen Z think the state pension won't even exist for them, and that creates, like I said, huge trust issues in the system.
Do you think this, in the end, is all about political courage, that none of the parties, even though in their heart, even if not in their heads, they know that it's not there, that the triple lock has to be either reformed or abolished in the long term, they just won't confront it?
100%. You know, pensioners are also one of the highest turnout rates when it comes to voting, and the, you know, the politicians know that. And so they know that they have to protect it or there'd be some sort of uproar. And also I don't think anyone is saying that we don't want the state pension to be there for those that need it. It's just that why is this, this amount is rising and rising and the year that you can take it is rising and rising. And actually, why are we not putting the same sort of thought process into what we can do for the next generation? How can we invest in the next generation? Also, maybe, you know, if they were voting more, then the politicians would be more inclined to support them, which is another thing I talk to my students about. But yeah, you know, it's a huge percentage, 11% of total public spending. And so I think it's silly to not review it. But I spoke to the Chancellor on Wednesday afternoon, in a closed round table. And it was one of the subjects I brought up, which was, you know, yes, youth unemployment is really high. And the next generation are fully aware that their taxes pay for the state pensioners of today. Whereas a lot of state pensioners will say, I paid into the system and therefore I'm entitled to take out of it. That's not quite how it works anymore.
Thank you very much, Abby. That's Abby Foster, LBC's personal finance expert. Right, more on London. Is it safe? Is it not? Jeff is in Munich. Jeff, you live in Munich. I don't know how often you come to London, but do you feel safe when you're here?
Absolutely not. I'm sorry to rain on anybody's parade, Ian, and thank you for having me here. You know, I'm an Arsenal fan. You'll forgive me my sins, and I fly over to watch the Arsenal ladies play here. And when I'm there, I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe in Brighton. I don't feel safe in Worthing. There is something which is...
You don't feel safe in Worthing?
No. There is something which is very wrong in Britain. I mean, I live in Munich. Yeah? I don't look behind me. I can walk across Hirschgarten. Yeah? And, you know, at midnight, there's a big park. Yeah? And I don't look behind me. There's nothing that I have to be afraid of. Yeah? And you've got more police than you can count.
Well, here. I don't look behind me when I walk the streets of London.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if I play my piano after 10 o'clock at night, yeah, the police turn up in pairs. And, you know, this is an organised, safe place. But when I go to Britain, and I would like it to be different, but you just don't feel safe there, yeah?
Well, look, I live here. You live in Munich. Munich is a wonderful place. I've been to Munich a couple of times. I didn't feel unsafe there. There are parts of, I mean, Frankfurt, there are parts of Frankfurt that I do feel unsafe in. When I went to Berlin, there were a couple of places I went there where I felt slightly unsafe. And I'm sure there are parts of London that where I might feel unsafe, but people go on about sort of Tower Hamlets as being a place that you feel unsafe. I used to live in Tower Hamlets. Did I ever feel unsafe there? Admittedly, this was quite a long time ago. No, I didn't. Would I feel unsafe there now? Well, I can't judge because I don't live there. But overall, I don't believe that London is any different to other any other capital city. Jeff, thank you very much indeed. Let's get the news headlines on LBC. It's 9:45. Here's Dominic Ellis.
Marks and Spencer's urging the Home Office and the Mayor of London to do more to tackle high street crime. President Trump has said there's much more to come after the US bombed Iran's largest bridge. And the Energy Secretary is reportedly considering approving the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, sunny spells and showers in the north and in the east, a high of 16 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound to Junction 11 at Dunstable South following an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. There are queues of about 3 miles on the M4 eastbound to Junction 12 at Thiel, and that's following an accident. The West Coast main line remains closed both ways between Euston and Milton Keynes, so that's Avanti West Coast and London Northwestern suspended on that stretch. Also, C2C trains aren't going to and from Fenchurch Street today because of the engineering works, so trains are going to and from Liverpool Street instead. Great Northern are running a reduced service to and from Moorgate, and also there's a reduced service on the Gatwick Express.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Matt Fry.
The Iran war is almost 5 weeks old, and amid a blizzard of contradictions from Trump, it seems to be spinning out of control. Does he have a plan? Does anyone?
Matt Fry at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
3, 2, 1, 0% APR on all-electric Mini Cooper. What was that, Luton? Handling is extraordinary. Centre of gravity so low. And it could be ours with a 15% deposit and 3-year term. OK, Luton, reroute me to the nearest Mini retailer now.
Land a new all-electric Mini Cooper with 0% APR. Report to your Mini retailer today. Mini UK is a credit broker. Ordered and delivered by 30th of June. PCP finance with Mini Financial Services. Subject to status. 18 plus T's and C's apply. Mini.co.uk/Cooper.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah!
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Ian Dale on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It's 9:49 on LBC. Last night on my show, I took a call from Sandra in Cheshunt, and we were talking about the parental responsibilities for disciplining kids who maybe go off the straight and narrow with reference to these link-up sort of... They're not riots, are they? I don't know what to call them. They're not riots. They're not protests. But anyway, gatherings, shall we say, these swarm things that have happened in Clapham. So I talked to Sandra, and then she explained that trust and openness was the most important thing as a parent. And she was talking about how she has brought up her 15-year-old son, Isaac. And I said, well, you want to play this call back to him when we finish? She said, oh, he's listening downstairs. So I said, right, get him upstairs and get him on the line. And this is what happened.
My mum is definitely an inspiration. Mum is just me and my mum in the house. I see I have to spend every waking moment with her. And it wouldn't be a lie to say if we get sick of each other sometimes. But the way to get past all these emotions and feelings is by talking, having these conversations. And I think I'm proud and I'm fortunate to be in a place in my life where I can have these mature conversations with my mum, where I can tell her how I feel. And these feelings are not going to be taken negatively, or I'm going to be treated negatively.
Mm.
Especially knowing how other people have these relationships with their parents. So yeah, I think it's wonderful to have such a mother who's so mature, respectful and kind. A lot of my friends, they all live with their parents, but I don't think a lot of my friends are very secluded in what they do. What they normally stay, you know, in their rooms just playing their games, not having these conversations.
Mm.
But I think my relationship with my mother is very different to my friends, just because of the openness. I mean, I don't really stay up in my room. My room isn't more than just a bed and a wardrobe and a television. I come downstairs, I play my steel pan, piano, do some work, watch some TV. And it's open. My house is open. We can have our talks. We can have our conversations. And I don't think my friends do have that. I think my friends do stay in their rooms and play their games and scroll and apps and don't really socialise. No, I think it's important to show affection. You know, the phrase "don't bite the hand that feeds you." You have to always show love. I think love is the best emotion to have in this world. I think love can heal a lot of problems. And I think give my mom a hug and a kiss. I think I just look like somebody who won't necessarily give my mom a hug and kiss, but I think I want to be the kind of father, kind of husband, the kind of man that will grow up and grow his children in a household where he can provide his children, his family, with such a love and care that I won't have to worry, and my mum won't have to worry about incidents that happen today happening to my children or to me because of the love that's shown, the love that I've been surrounded by. And I know that it can't and it won't. And I'm secure in my love with my mum, my love with my relationship with God, to know that I won't be influenced by the negativity that is surrounding the youth, including myself today. Applying to sixth form now, I'm just applied to study biology, chemistry and history. I want to be a paediatrician purely because I feel like being a child myself, but I see the younger ones, they're happy, you know? And I feel like all people don't deserve to be in ill health, but the children, they can bring so much joy to a working day. My mom's a teacher, so I know how she feels working with children. And I've seen it. I've seen how it goes. I'm an ambassador for my drama club, so I work closely with children, and I like to think I'm quite good with them as well. So, yeah, I think I just want to keep working with children and be a doctor, be successful, be happy, be someone my mum is proud to call her son, as she has done earlier on the show.
Talk about an old head on young shoulders there, 15 years old. Now, imagine if all mothers were like Sandra, imagine if all sons were like Isaac. I mean, if you've got time today, go back on Global Player or the LBC app and go and catch up. And this was on my show last night, about 20 minutes from the end. I talked to Sandra and then followed by Isaac. It really is the most inspirational listen. And I would say that together, that they've done the best call that I've had on LBC, certainly this year. Can't speak more highly than that, can I? Kelly's in Salbridgeworth. Hello, Kelly.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to say?
It was just an experience I had. I had been made redundant, and I was just working from home on my husband's business. I got a job back in banking in Canary Wharf. And on the day of my interview, which was last September, I got off at Tottenham Hall and I could hear someone say, "I don't want to have to use this on you." And so I turned around and there was a boy who was probably about 15 with a flick knife. And then I sort of slowly walked towards the National Rail man on the platform and I said, "He's got a flick knife." And he said, "You don't want to know what the other two boys have got."
they've got big zombie knives down their jeans. So I was just like, oh. The first boy took off up the escalators. The other two ran after him up the escalators over the other side. One of the other guards stopped one of them. But I don't know what happened after that because they were out of the station and I got on my train and went off to my interview at Canary Wharf.
How did
got the job.
Oh, you got it. Good.
I got the job. And one of the ladies that met me at the lift said, oh, how was your journey in? I was like, hmm.
Did that journey, though, almost like put you off, though, because you think, well, I'm going to have to do this every day.
Well, this is it. And it was quite an eye-opener, to be fair. I mean, I grew up in Kentish Town and I've lived in London most of my life. So it was a bit of a shock, really, because I've commuted my whole life and I never came across anything like that. And after 5 years of being away from commuting, I just thought, oh, my God. Because I listen to LBC a lot and knife crime. And I'm like, oh, this is knife crime. But what happened was I got barged at Stratford as well by somebody, which I didn't respond to because I just sort of like looked to see what was going on. And they were going up when people were coming down and he was sort of ranting a bit, the guy. So there was something, an issue going on there. But I just thought, my husband said that one of his customers locally goes to Liverpool Street and then goes from there to Canary Wharf. So I changed my journey. I just go to Liverpool Street and I get the Elizabeth line and I feel a lot safer.
And it's quicker, I see.
It is quicker, but it was the cheap, the cheaper version was going Tottenham House, Stratford, yeah, and then Canary Wharf. But I just thought, well, I just felt a bit safer that way.
I should resist any jokes about cheapness in Tottenham, but there we are. Kelly, thank you very much indeed. Danny's in Gravesend. Hello, Danny.
Hello. Yeah, how you doing? All right.
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Yeah. I agree with you 100% normally, Ian, but London at the minute is rotten. The place is absolutely rotten. So I don't know what part you must walk through London and not see it. I mean, I'll go into London a lot, especially in the summer. Now, I'm not a fan of this guy, but I've got to say, he cleaned London up when it all started with Ken Livingstone. He started to get London really clean. Boris Johnson carried on, but the one we got now, he just lets it's a tip. It really is.
I've seen beans which bit?
All around the parks, all up around Oxford Street, all around them areas, the bins are full. I've seen rats in the parks, Ian. Honestly, I wish I'd have took photographs of it because it's disgusting. It really is. He doesn't like spending money on keeping London clean. London, when say Ken Livingstone and all that, but it was spotless. You could eat the dinner off the floor in London. I used to walk around being proud of it, you know. But you can't there, Ian. You cannot now. The place is an absolute tip. Honestly, it really is.
Well, at least it's not Birmingham, because that really is a tip at the moment because of the strikes. But we'll leave that one for another day. Danny, thank you very much indeed. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinion. There is a new episode of my Where Politics Meets History podcast, which I do with Tessa Dunlop twice a week. It's out this morning. If you've got nothing better to do today, obviously, you'll be listening to LBC as well, maybe at the same time. I don't know. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at one, it's Sheila Fogarty. But right now, a real treat for you. It's time for Matt Fry.
Thank you, Ian, and happy Easter to you. Right, as we head towards the sixth week of this conflict in the Middle East, President Trump shows no signs of taking his foot off the war gas pedal. It's ironic, really, because the rest of us are being forced to ease off our literal gas pedals because petrol prices make driving almost unaffordable. This is a worldwide crisis. Since many of you went to bed, by the way, Donald Trump has threatened to bomb more bridges in Iran and electric power plants in what appears to be a new push for Tehran to sign a deal. It could also be a war crime, by the way. Why does Trump take no time off? Not even over Easter. He's still at it. Just the post this morning. Our military, the greatest and most powerful anywhere in the world, hasn't even started. I thank you for your attention to this matter. Come and join me.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Marks & Spencer is urging the government to do more to tackle a rise in retail theft and violence. It follows incidents of so-called link-ups, where groups of young people arrange to meet using social media before surging into shops. A number of dispersal orders have been put in place across the country. Head of External Affairs at Marks & Spencer, Adam Hawksby, says it's very worrying.
Some incidents will be serious and organised crime. Others will be individuals that are under the influence of alcohol and drugs. And this can be really scary, both for our colleagues working in the store and for the security guards. We've had ammonia thrown in the face of one of our security guards in the last week. We've had a store manager headbutted.
The Home Office says it is giving police stronger powers. President Trump has said there's much more to come after the US bombed Iran's largest bridge. Iranian state media say 8 people were killed. The White House has defended US actions in the war after 100 legal experts raised concerns of serious violations from all sides. The US Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has sacked the Army Chief of Staff Randy George. Since entering the Pentagon, Mr. Hegseth has fired more than a dozen senior officers. It's understood he's looking to appoint personnel who will implement the Trump administration's vision for the army. The Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, is reportedly considering approving the first major North Sea oil and gas field project in almost 10 years. Ministers are under pressure to increase drilling due to energy concerns around security triggered by the Middle East conflict. A government spokesman says no decision has been made. And the Orion capsule carrying the astronauts aboard the Artemis 2 mission is now officially on its way to the moon. The 4 astronauts on board fired its engine to free the capsule from Earth's gravitational pull overnight. Laurie Glaze leads the Artemis program and has given this update.
For the first time since 1972, during Apollo 17, human beings have left Earth orbit. From this point forward, the laws of orbital mechanics are going to carry our crew to the moon, around the far side, and back to Earth.
LBC weather, windy with scattered showers for many areas, some sunny spells and some showers in the north and east, a high of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Get 25% off coffee and pastries at Cafe Nero with Compare the Market. Take it away, Sergey.
I need a Nero. I'm holding out for a Nero to get a flat white. It's gotta be strong, and it's gotta taste good, and it's gonna be made just right. I need a Nero.
Only with the Compare the Market app, the simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product, one membership a year, 25% off barista-made drinks and pastries, app only 2 codes per day, exclusions and T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Matt Fry.
Surprise, surprise, and a very good morning to all of you. You may not be interested in war, but war is interested in you, goes the old saying, loosely attributed to Leon Trotsky. What started as a surgical strike on one supreme leader in Tehran and the dawn of bombardment in a war of choice has rippled out to become an economic war of necessity, triggering fuel shortages and emergency plans across the world. It has divided allies, threatened the future of NATO, made China look like the world's designated driver, made Russia a lot richer, and kept the brutal regime in Tehran in power, resilient, emboldened, and able to threaten its neighbors like never before, while having a chokehold on the world economy through the Strait of Hormuz, which it has threatened to turn into a Tehran toll booth. Operation Epic Fury, as the Pentagon dubbed it in a spirit of hubris, looks more like blind fury. And we're all forced to take an interest. Just listen to what Donald Trump said about the objectives nearing completion when he was speaking from the White House yesterday.
Tonight, I'm pleased to say that these core strategic objectives are nearing completion. Tonight, every American can look forward to a day when we are finally free from the wickedness of Iranian aggression and the specter of nuclear blackmail. Because of the actions we have taken, we are on the cusp of ending Iran's sinister threat to America and the world. And I'll tell you, the world is watching. And when we do, when it's all over, the United States will be safer, stronger, more prosperous, and greater than it has ever been before.
and the world is indeed watching, but mostly from behind the sofa. And as for those reasons for going to war that he outlined in an Oval Office address on February the 28th, the day the bombing started, well, they seem to be veering all over the place, a bit like a shopping trolley. So that makes it much more difficult for him to claim some kind of victory. And to claim victory while the Iranians still control the Strait of Hormuz and therefore the flow of oil and gas and many other things like fertilizer to the world economy, well, that's not really victory, is it? Let's speak to Natasha Churak. She's an independent Middle East correspondent based in Dubai. Good morning, Natasha.
Good morning to you, Matt.
It's good to speak to you again. I'm fascinated by how Dubai and indeed the other Gulf states are faring in all this, because I don't think, you know, although Trump has apologized to them for the fact that they've been hit by Iran, I don't think he fully understood the degree to which the Iranian regime would take it out on their neighbors in the Gulf in order to put pressure on America. So what's the situation like at the moment in Dubai? How does it feel to be there?
So things certainly feel tense. It's not the same as it used to be. And for those of us who lived here for a while, nobody saw this coming. The UAE has long been a very safe, stable country in a region that has seen its fair share of conflict. I would say in the day to day, people who've chosen to stay here, which is the majority of us, do feel safe in the sense that we know the air defenses are very effective. Infrastructure is still working perfectly. You know, I went to the beach over the weekend and it was so crowded that I couldn't even find parking. You know, people are still going shopping, going to restaurants. But of course, it feels more tense. It's quieter. There's a lot less traffic on the roads. Tourism is dramatically reduced. And so that has had an effect on local businesses. And, you know, for those of us who live here, our families overseas are constantly texting us, do you have a plan? Are you going to come home? Are you going to stay? For me personally, I still feel very comfortable to stay. And as a journalist, it's important for me to be here at this historic time for the region. But things are certainly tense. Just this morning, I was at the gym and everyone's phones went off at the same time with the missile alerts. Mm. And I will say, actually, sometimes the missile alerts on the phones are more startling than the booms themselves.
Well, I know, I've just been to Israel for a few weeks and, you know, there are alerts all the time and they really get under your skin. And you then have to think very carefully about whether you stay in the gym or wherever you are or go down to the bunker. In Israel, there's a lot of discipline. People tend to go to the bunker, and that's why they have very few injuries. I'm sure something similar is happening in Dubai. But to those, you know, in a spirit of schadenfreude who thought this is the end of the Dubai dream, I think they were wrong, weren't they? I mean, those places are a lot more resilient than a lot of people give them credit for.
I think they were wrong. And we have a lot of stories of countries and of cities enduring war and coming out stronger. Look, the UAE endured COVID. They endured the 2008 financial crisis. It endured the invasion of Kuwait, the Gulf Wars 1 and 2. And I think the people who are committed to the UAE, you know, it's 90% expats in this country. Most of us are committed because we came here because of what it offers us in terms of business friendliness, in terms of the tax setup, in terms of safety, in terms of 350 days a year of sunshine and being a travel and logistics hub. And it's also a very diverse place to live. You have people from all over the world, all sorts of different kinds of backgrounds, professionally, ethnically, linguistically. Just, you know, in January, February, March, you know, you have Nowruz, Ramadan, the Lunar New Year. You know, you have beautiful Indian holidays, Diwali. You have all these holidays happening at the same time. I would say just in terms of quality of life and in terms of the richness of diversity, those things aren't going to change. So I think with its kind of pragmatic strategy as it's approaching this conflict right now and its technology, its alliances, so far things seem to be under control. Obviously, the risks don't stop and they could get worse. But I do feel that it will bounce back from this.
But if you take